like to call this meeting to order, City Council Workshop. It is September 8, 2020. Pursuant to the Governor's Executive Order suspending all Florida statutes that require a quorum to be present in person at local government public meetings or require a local government body to meet at a specific public place, the City may conduct meetings of its council without having a quorum of its members present physically or at any specific location, and utilizing communications media technology such as telephonic or video conferencing as provided by Florida statutes. As mayor, pursuant to the authority granted to me by the city charter, I declared a public emergency on March 15, 2020, in response to COVID-19. Furthermore, pursuant to those powers and the governor's executive order, I suspended all city requirements that require a physical quorum to be present to conduct this meeting and authorize that this meeting be conducted by communications media technology under the city's state of emergency proclamation for virtual meetings executed on April 3rd, 2020. The city manager, pursuant to the authority granted him by the city's initial state of emergency, has closed City Hall to the public. Therefore, no member of the public will be allowed into the community wing of City Hall during this meeting. Notice that this meeting was going to be held by communication media technology and not at a physical location was posted on the city's website at least 5 days ago. The notice provided that those members of the public needing reasonable accommodation to participate in the meeting could contact the city clerk for assistance by noon on Monday, September 7, 2020. Access to this meeting is being provided via live stream on the city's website at www.palmcoastgov.com and by calling 386-223-1690. Should you need technical assistance, please call 386-986-2391. Today is September 8, 2020. It is 9 a.m. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Hall.
Here.
Vice Mayor Clufus.
Present.
Councilmember Branquino.
Here.
Councilmember Cuff.
Present.
And Councilmember Nett.
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Before we start public participation, I just want to state our condolences to Mary DiStefano's family. Mary has served this council for 8 years, was part of the start of the city, and was an integral part of many discussions on many of the initiatives you see today. So our prayers go out to Mary's family, our thoughts. Councilmember Netz, I know you had served with Mary. Did you want to state anything?
She was a very interesting person. You know, her laugh was infectious, and yet she could be extremely serious. I think one of the things that I liked about Mary, her visions, her goals, her desires very much paralleled those of our residents. She was an excellent spokesperson. When there were brief times when she would disagree with policy procedure, she did it in a ladylike manner, no animosity, no hardness in her voice. She understood what democracy was all about. I think she just made a very, very, very good representative for her residents, for our residents, for those early days in Palm Coast. She will be missed.
I agree. And I can still hear her voice. I was thinking about that all weekend. She had a very distinct voice. So just thought I'd, you know, send that out to our residents and the community at whole as well. It is a loss to our community. We'll now open it up to public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on anything reflecting the agenda or otherwise, please call in at 386-223-1690. Please unmute yourself by hitting star 9. Okay. Thank you very much, Doug. We'll close public participation. We'll move to agenda item number E, which is presentations, a presentation and discussion of Old Kings Road South Utilities.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Honorable Mayor, City Council.
We've got a discussion this morning trying to get guidance and have conversation around this old Kings Road South Utilities that was supposed to fill the terms of the master settlement agreement back in, I believe, 07. This morning we have sort of a three-part intro. Jason DiLorenzo is going to introduce the item and where we're at. NACE is going to bring us up to history through the various interlocal agreements. Currently, we do not have enforced interlocal agreement. And we have Steve Flanagan to help us discuss and understand where we're at positionally with the utilities. And I believe from a citizen perspective, I know Michael Cimento and Reggie are here this morning if there's questions or comments about the agreement. So with that, Jason, if you would introduce the item.
I would say not from a citizen perspective, from a representative.
Proponent perspective.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Sorry, yes,
say,
yes.
Okay. Didn't want to make it seem like we were inviting
public. Correct. Nope. Absolutely. Thank you for that clarification. I apologize.
Okay.
Very good clarification.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council. You've seen this item several times before, and our attorney, Nasa Borkert, is going to go over the history, as Mr. Morton said. And then Steve Flanagan is going to kind of go over the utility plan and the benefits to providing services. And then, yes, we have a couple of representatives of the major landowners in the Old Kings Road South service area as well with us this morning. So for several years, landowners in the service area have been requesting utility services. Goes back to the 2007 agreement. And staff is looking for guidance on how we should continue, if we should restart our negotiations with the county and replace the old interlocal agreement, which expired, with a new interlocal, which will set the terms for providing the service in the area. As Mr. Morton said, this is not the agreement itself. This is a discussion item for us to get your feedback on how we should move forward. And I'll introduce NASA, who's going to go over the history now. Doug, I can't see NASA. Is she on?
Did she call in?
We're searching for her now.
NASA, if you've called in, please hit star 6 to unmute yourself.
Did I get that wrong? It's star 6?
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
Okay. No, but I was just like, okay, do we change that?
Thanks for keeping us online.
NASA's having some technical difficulties. She'll be on shortly.
Okay.
Okay.
Dialing in now. She had trouble. Okay.
Doug, is my screen showing correctly? It's looking different on my end.
I see your PowerPoint. You're not in presentation mode.
Okay. There it goes. Okay.
That is weird because all the ones are working. The mayor screen isn't working. Maybe after the meeting we can, or now if we have a minute. Yes, the display.
All
more minutes, and if someone else can start, that would be great.
239.
Go ahead, Nasa.
Hi, am I on? Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Hi. Sorry about that. I'm having some connection problems at home. So good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for waiting on me. Jason, have you already done the intro?
Yes, Nasa. We're up to your first slide.
Okay. Good morning again, everybody. Thank you again. So Jason's already given you the introduction on this, and again, I apologize. I was having some connection problems with my actual Zoom connection. So we're here today to talk about my part of this presentation is what's occurred in the past leading up to how we got here. So essentially, we were approached by some property owners located in the Old Kings Road South Service area. And in looking back on this, trying to look at the history of the site to see what we could do to facilitate their requests and asking us to serve this area, we had to take into consideration the settlement agreement that was entered into between Palm Coast and the city of Flagler Beach, Flagler County, and the Gardens Hammocks Beach Property Owner Association. This was to resolve a dispute over providing water and wastewater services to this southern area on Old Kings Road. And essentially, it did a few things. It provided that no entity can, it laid out a map of the service areas within this area, and it basically said that no entity can offer service to another entity without the express written consent of the other. And those service areas, as I said, were laid out on the map. So everybody had a place as to where they were going to serve. In addition to that, the city agreed to provide bulk service to the county, water service, and in doing so, they agreed to extend a water line along the South Old Kings Road, along South Old Kings Road, and Steve can get into exactly where that's at, to the end of the city's jurisdictional boundary at the time of the settlement agreement, which I'll point out is different than where the boundary is today. Flagler County, which, as I said before, would provide utility service to this area, and the city agreed in that settlement agreement not to require annexation for certain areas as a condition of utility service. As you know, typically we require annexation as a condition to provide utility service to that area.
Nasa, I have a question.
Hey, Jason.
Nasa, I have a question. As far as the county providing bulk, can you speak to that, or anyone on the call speak to how, what was their plan to buy bulk utility? Was that to tie into their package plan of Eagles Lake? I'm trying to figure out what we're talking about, what entire area, or they, what was their master plan?
Nasa, I can take that if you'd like.
Yes, please, Steve. Thank you.
Mayor, good morning, first of all, and City Council. I think back in the time, in the original program or thought was that the city would provide the county bulk water. Then the county would redistribute that bulk water to these five property owners at retail rates.
Okay.
Exactly what they were going to do on the wastewater side, I'm not aware, but I believe they were probably going to, at the point that the city provided them water, they would no longer need their package water plant on the joint-sided water and wastewater site that they have on the west side of the road. So then they would convert that site to solely a wastewater plant.
Steve, may I ask a question? Actually,
certainly.
Two questions. The water line that we've agreed to extend south, is that a looped line or is that just a dead end?
It is a looped line, Mr. Netz. It would come across from Citation Parkway over to Old Kings Road. and then it would have a little bit of a tail to it, if you will, down Old Kings Road, so the entire thing wouldn't be looped, but it would be, the major portion of it would be a looped system and provide us transmission capabilities. So it would be a good thing for areas outside of this area.
The second question is, under that original agreement, did that create consecutive systems?
If we provided bulk, yes. If it was set up the way it was originally thought to be, as NASA was talking about, then when we serve the county with bulk water, they would become a consecutive system at that point, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, NASA, I just needed a point of clarification as far as...
May I ask a question as well, Ms. Mayor?
Yes. Yes.
That facility that the county has, that is the one that we had discussed previously that's in pretty rough shape. Is that true, Steve?
I cannot speak to the condition of it. I'm not aware of that. All I know about it is from many years ago, it is a small water package plant and a very small wastewater package plant.
Understood. I think I had spoken to Richard Adams about that briefly, but it was a little while ago. So understood. I appreciate it. Thank you, Steve.
Well, I can tell you, Councilor Vice Mayor Clufus, since I've been, remember I was on the county commission, Eagles Lake spent a lot of money on that package plant, just an FYI. I mean, a lot. So if it's in disrepair, that would have to be, it was not maintained properly, because I remember those discussions very distinctly. So,
understood.
And now the county proposes to turn that over to FGUA.
Hi, this is NASA. I don't know that we have a firm. I believe the last time we were in contact with the county in our meeting, and Steve, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the county manager said the intent was for the county to turn over, yes, their utility infrastructure, and this being one of that, over to FGUA. However, I believe they're still hammering out the plan, but Steve, you may have an update, or Jason, an update on that.
NASA, you have as much as I have. That's my understanding as well.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well, that they're still in negotiations.
Right. So if there's any more questions, we can take them now or I can move on.
I'm good.
Okay, so the next slide is just, Jason, the next slide is just the properties that are requesting service that I mentioned before, and it's color-coded to show the owners and the properties that we're talking about here that are requesting service from the city. And then I'll kind of talk about the history of this service area. So back in December of 2018, and this was after quite a few months of negotiation between the property owners on the previous slide and the city and the county, the city and the county entered into an interlocal agreement to provide water and wastewater services. As I said previously, the county has indicated they wanted to, as it pertains to this area, be out of the utility business for all intents and purposes. And so the way that they moved forward as far as this area goes, and in conjunction with the property owner, they wanted to develop a foundation to provide a regional approach addressing the water and sewer service in this area. And basically, they did that through a settlement agreement. Now, this first settlement agreement that the city entered into, and many of you probably remember the agreement, it laid the foundation, but it was just that, a foundation. There were not too many specifics in it. What it did do is said that the city and the county and the property owners would continue to work together to hammer out a more specific way to move forward. And that way to move forward would be would be summarized and put together in a future interlocal agreement. So this was a foundation interlocal agreement, and the idea was to work out the specifics and enter into another one. So the city moved forward in continuing to try to pursue that with the county, but there never ended up being a actual executed interlocal agreement that was agreed upon by both the city and the county. It was extended twice, but it never moved forward. So essentially, at this point, it's been stalled for a while now, and we still have the original interlocal agreement that was executed and entered into by the city and the county has been terminated, and so there's no agreement between the city and the county now. So to be able to move forward in this area with the city having any involvement in providing services, we would need to enter into an interlocal agreement with the county, because as you may remember, the city cannot serve this area under the settlement agreement unless the county specifically consents to it. And part of the way of doing that from a legal perspective, and this is included in the settlement agreement that the city entered into back in 2007, is that there be a successive or there can be subsequent interlocal agreements that are entered into if both parties agree that it's for service, for the city to be able to provide service here. So that's essentially what the property owners are still asking the city for, and part of the reason why we're here today to get some direction as to that. So with that, I'll pass it over to Steve to give you the specifics on the plans here.
Thank you, Nysa. Okay, the master utility schematic or proposal basically would be, we'll start with water. Would be for the city to make connection at Citation Parkway on the west side of I-95, come across I-95, and then currently run up a proposed right-of-way within the Bulow development plan over to Old Kings Road, and then run the 12-inch water main up to roughly where Craig's funeral home is and make tie in there. Then to
Steve,
the south.
Is that different than the current Bulow project? Like, is that on septic? Or, I mean.
There's virtually nothing in the Bulow LLC property right now. It's all vacant property.
Okay.
It can get confusing because you have the Bulow property owners and then that you have the Bulow campground area. So it's a little confusing.
Okay, that's a good clarification point, though.
Then from where Citation comes over and ties into Old Kings Road, the water main would additionally run south all the way down to property number one, which is the county's water and wastewater treatment plant site there. And it would tie in, the concept would be that it would tie in to the Eagle Lakes main that is serviced at that property line. And then it would feed the current existing 10-inch water line that runs down to Eagle Lakes. And on the wastewater side, the wastewater force main would tie in at the intersection roughly of State Road 100 and Old Kings Road. It would head easterly on State Road 100 for a little ways and then come in behind the commercial facility that's right there at the intersection. Then it's proposed as a 16-inch diameter force main. It would run south down back to that same property, property number one, the current county water and wastewater plant site, and tie in at that location, on property number two, we would construct a large diameter triplex wet well and pump station, and that would be the initial wastewater service would all funnel to that location from these property owners and then be pumped to wastewater treatment plant number one on Utility Drive. Now, a couple of other facts and information. The landowners would all be required to provide the city easements so that we can keep the improvements outside of the Old Kings Road right-of-way for the most part. Properties number one and two on the slide would be conveyed from Flagler County to the city of Palm Coast for, as I stated, a master pump station on the east side of Old Kings Road and a future wastewater treatment facility on the west side of the road on property number one. Both these properties currently have improvements on them, and the city would request or require that the county have them demoed and provide them free and clear to the city as part of this agreement. The new force main, as I said, would be connected at 100 and run down to property location two. It's proposed to be 16 inch and has been what we call hydraulically modeled so that it is sized for the future and our future needs down in that area, and to serve areas actually outside of all of these property boundaries. If we were to put a wastewater plant down there, we would actually bring some wastewater from other areas down to that facility. Then the new water main, as we talked about it, would be looped from Citation Parkway over to Old Kings Road and up to State Road 100.
That leaves quite a tail from Citation further south, does it not? That's not looped.
I'm sorry, Mr. Netz?
Where you showed Citation Parkway connecting to Old Kings Road, from there south, your force main, your property one, property two, none of that is looped. Is that correct?
That is correct. It would not be looped from the point where Citation, the water main comes over from Citation and ties into Old Kings Road. That portion of the water main would not be looped.
So you're going to wind up doing a lot of flushing on that line.
Well, and one of the benefits, as what we saw to this, Mr. Netz, is that the campground would become a user immediately. And if we worked everything out with Eagle Lake subdivision, that flow would also be utilized immediately, both water and wastewater wise. So we'd have turnover there for the main. But flushing could, and water quality would be important, and potentially there would be some flushing that would be required to keep water quality up, depending on demand.
If you could, I have another couple of questions.
Certainly.
You're adding customers, you're adding users. What about adding capacity?
Is this
going to be from the intermediate Florida aquifer? Is this going to be shallow well? Do we have the capacity?
Well, you've touched on a couple of the, as we see, some of the potential benefits, and I'm not sure. I think that might be on the next slide. I think we're about done with that slide. So we'll go into the benefits, and then I'll try and answer your questions, Mr. Nutz. Some of the benefits that we see in providing water and wastewater to this area are that it would allow the current owners, if you will, the county and the campground facility to properly abandon their supply wells and not drill additional wells in the future that compete with the nearby city well field. Much of our water treatment plant number two that's on Citation Parkway has wells that are fairly close to the wells that are from the county and the campground folks. So that would be one of the big benefits. We would not have a competing entity looking for source water very close to our source water for water plant number two. Another major benefit is that it allows, I believe, four package plants to be eliminated and reduce the potential negative environmental hazard that they sometimes create. Because you have, the county has the one water and wastewater facility, and the campground has a water and wastewater facility as well. So there's where you come up with four package plants that basically can be eliminated or would be eliminated through this process. I believe that's the lion's share of the major benefits that
So Steve, are you saying then per this agreement moving forward, it would be at the cost of the developers for all the infrastructure laid over in this area, including the system?
Basically, the city would build the system. Each of these developers would be paying water capacity and wastewater capacity. We had worked out a preliminary agreement with the campground folks, and much of the funding for the backbone lines, if you will, the water and wastewater trunk lines or backbone lines, would be paid through that agreement with the campground folks. The water line is actually a commitment that the city made. So that funding is in our current capital, five-year capital plan to pay for that line, and we have just been pushing it out until the need arose to actually do it. But it's actually funded in our capital plan based on the commitment that NASA spoke about from 2007.
So since the county currently doesn't collect impact fees, and this would not be in our jurisdictional boundaries, all development that would occur in there, I mean, the cost of all of that and impact, we would just bear the cost of the initial infrastructure of the utility line?
The initial backbone water and wastewater system, yes, we would fund that initially. And these folks that are outside of the city limits that are in county areas, they would have individual utility agreements with the city of Palm Coast. And in those individual utility agreements, they would pay their share of city capacity fees for water and wastewater. So they would pay impact fees. We call them capacity fees, but they would pay water and wastewater capacity fees as anyone else connecting to the system currently pays.
And they would pay the, what is our rate of outside jurisdictional boundaries?
After they would connect, let me clarify for a second. The capacity fees are not basically ramped up to 25%. They are paid the same amount whether you're inside the city limits or outside your city limits. However, after connection is made, the user rates, the monthly rates, are bumped up to 25%, or you pay 125% of the normal rate for city, the normal retail rate.
Okay.
Now, for this to happen, the county is going to have to reach an agreement with FGUA, especially this area of abandoning wells, existing wells. Is FGUA going to be agreeable to this, do you think?
Mr. Netz, there's a lot of work that would have to take place for those kind of things, getting down into the weeds with the county, with FGUA, depending on, you know, where their agreement stands between the two of them, as well as, excuse me, all the property owners, but there's a lot of work that would need to be done. Assuming that
it's my understanding, it's my understanding that the county is looking for us to either make a decision on moving forward as a city in lieu of FGUA, that no agreement has been executed. They're at a crossroads. I know our current county administrator has stated that he wants to get out of the utility business. And so they're looking for regional solutions, and this area was one that was the main part of if they would go with FGUA or not. So that's my understanding. Am I incorrect in that?
I think you're close, and Mayor, and so far my conversation with Jerry, it said it's a timing issue. They've begun conversations. I've pushed that conversation back on the project proponents and said at this point in time, you need to go clarify with FGUA to a very high degree what the proposition looks like and get information on what their disposition is. We didn't have conversations direct with FGUA yet. So county, to your point, is working forward. There's still some time. As Mr. Cameron has stated, at some point this might be an agreement with FGUA, so the city continue to proceed, so we could change that stream. And then I believe one of the project proponents, I believe it's Mr. Cimento, has had conversations with FGUA and has a clear idea of the disposition of where they're standing at this point in time.
That is correct.
Let's take a worst case scenario. Let's suppose that the county is not able to reach agreement with FGUA. If this were to proceed, does that mean that we take over the responsibility for that package plant?
That is not our intention, and this agreement...
I know it's not our intention. The last thing I want to do is take over a failing utility.
Yeah, we're not going to go... There's been a couple parameters of the agreement that we've set out high level from the beginning to entertain, again, whether we get back into an MOU. One of them was a distribution question. Don't want to assume existing distribution areas that are probably or could be substandard. And that could be in the campground or other areas, so we don't want to take on infrastructure where we don't know how it was built or where it is. One was the cost, that net neutral to the utility other than what our obligations were in the 07 agreement, and then the rates and the connection charges funding the share of capacity and connection. And then the last one we've been steadfast on is we want no financial obligation to maintain or monitor or disconnect and disassemble and remove, whether that comes an order from DEM or anyone, a package plant, because I'm assuming once it's shut down, it can't just sit there. It's going to have to be removed, and the city wants no financial obligation to be involved in any of that with the package plant. Our objective is to, if the council likes that objective, is not just the water line, additionally provide sewer, expand off the original terms of the MOU by providing those city utilities, but not incurring a cost to our either utility or to our residents that we shouldn't be assuming.
Assuming all this goes through, the responsibility for building this future waste treatment plant and so on and so forth falls on Palm Coast.
Correct.
We would incur the debt, the long-term debt, to build it. That involves the entire city as well as these areas. It's not just this area. So that onus falls upon all of our residents, does it not?
To some proportion, the utility is a collective enterprise. You're not incorrect. It is a master system. When we do an expansion or a new filter train, it is debt borne by the utility, paid for by, as you're aware, the enterprise from the rates.
Mr. Morton, if I can add to that, as I kind of touched on very briefly in my prior presentation part, it is the intent for the utility, if this were to go through, that customers would be serviced wastewater with this new site that the city would acquire from the county. So we would actually be receiving capacity fees and funds from areas outside this Old Kings Road South area to be served by that future wastewater plant.
So, Mr. Schimento, if I can ask you then, again, I've not been privy to the exact conversations of FGUA. I've spoken to the mayor of Beverly Beach, who got a letter from FGUA about working with them through the county as well. Is this in lieu of moving forward with FGUA, or is this in addition?
It's an alternative, Mayor.
Okay.
If I may remind everybody, but the city already has the obligation to provide water to this entire region. So you're kind of halfway in. And the campground plant is currently a package plant, and it discharges into nature. We'll just leave it at that. And the whole idea was to take that package plant off and rather have multiple package plants that have a real utility company that would be yours. So because the county is in an under contract with FGUA, we have not had final discussions on how FGUA would either participate as the county's service provider in that region, or whether they might step aside, amend their contract, and let the county and city go back to its initial deal that it had through the end of December of last year. So where FGUA stands in this process is unknown until, you know, the city demonstrates or declares an appetite to enter into discussions about this.
Well, and, you know, let me just state very clearly, I mean, you know, I was very vocal in my opinion that the county should have never gotten in the utility business as a county commissioner, frankly, just because of the economies of scale and certainly Palm Coast purchased the utility many years ago and decided to get into that business and is the major service provider. So, you know, not to continue to revisit history, but it's important to understand the history here, as those agreements were laid out many years ago in an effort to stop the county-city water wars that were going on in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, until this agreement. So, you know, I'm in support of regional solutions. I'm certainly in support of, you know, helping, you know, environmental impacts. Not a fan of having package plants nor septic systems in Florida. So, you know, I'm interested in hearing the remainder of the presentation. I just need a clarification. So the owners of these properties are just looking for a clear direction from the city of Palm Coast on the city utility moving forward in conjunction with you and then presenting to the county a plan?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
We're just asking if you all would like to be considered as part of the solution, or if you didn't want to get into the sewer business, because remember, you're already in the water business in that region,
yep,
that you would just allow Fugua to continue to operate this regional plant or create some type of public-private partnership.
Councilmember Cuff.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Again, sort of like the mayor's comments, I'm a big fan of regional solutions, but I'm not entirely clear who's asking us to do what here. It looks like we're being pitched by a bunch of owners of private property that want a better utility systems for their property so that they can develop it and make money, which is not bad. That's what developers do. But if this is a county-city deal, where's the county? We've got half the city staff here today. We've got a representative of the property owners. I mean, what is the county asking us to do here? Or maybe another way of putting this is, I know we considered this a while ago and then it seemed to be shelved. What has changed since the last time the city considered this? Again, I'm not opposed to the deal, but there seem to be a lot of moving parts here, and I'm not sure who's asking us to do what and why at this point. Matt, Steve, does somebody have an answer to that?
Sure, I'll jump in from my perspective, and Steve can jump in too. The county is again, they're on their way out, and they'll either just turn it all over to Fugua, or there's an opportunity here, as has been noted, we're already in the water business. Does it make sense and for this area to extend the sewer line as well? When Richard was here, he was, and I think Steve can fill us in on his agreement, that there were certain advantages in I know it's a water issue, the wellhead protection, but also in the environmental aspect, acquiring property. There's some land transfers that go into eventual south end sewer facilities that will be built at some point in the future. So it's land acquisition, wellhead protection. And so this agreement has sort of, to your point, been pitched as, since we're in the water business, we have the potential to extend the utility connection, we have some obligations nearby off Old Kings Road South. Did it make sense for the utility in terms of increasing customers, increasing rating and bond capacity of the utility to go ahead and extend those lines south? And I think that's why we're here today, just before it moves past a point where it's gone and there's another utility to the south of the city. Is this a conversation, for all the reasons mentioned, going back to 07 and forward, something the city's interested in, to your point, many moving parts, trying to put together an MOU with the county, figuring out how FGUA fits into this, how the property owners fit into this, all the expectations, moving forward, trying to solve these contemporaneous issues.
And let me just add, I think the timing is appropriate to have these conversations because, like history, the city went into the utility business to define its own destiny, if you will, and help control certain areas of growth in our community and what that looked like for capacity. So, it's a lot easier negotiating with your neighbor rather than another government entity located in Tallahassee with different partners. So I think the timing just came about in my discussions with Mayor Emmett is because the county is looking for answers on the different partners and how they want to proceed. And this is just one area that certainly stands out from that regional perspective.
Let me offer a little bit of historical perspective. When when the privately owned utility company was put up for sale, we initially said, no, thank you. We went to FGUA, and I can remember Dick Kelton and I spending, I won't say hundreds of hours, but many, many hours over in Bristow, talking to FGUA. That seemed to be a perfectly legitimate solution to the issue. Then two cities in the panhandle, Milton and Gulf Breeze, put their bid in to buy the utility. They put a bid in higher than what FGUA was willing to spend. That's when we decided that we needed to get into the utility business. Why? Because privately owned utilities are regulated by the state. Publicly owned utilities are not. Those two communities, one of 6,000, one of 8,000, one of that order of magnitude, could have charged whatever they wanted. We decided we were not going to be the cash cow for the panhandle cities. That's when we bought it. Looking at this overall, the advantages that I see are environmental. Fewer package plants, better handling of waste, more efficient water, so on and so forth. Those are kind of a generic background benefit. I have yet to see the specific benefit to Palm Coast. Utilities don't make a profit. So by adding customers and adding capacity, you break even. I don't see the specific advantage to the city of Palm Coast. I would hope maybe somebody can address that. Maybe Mr. Schmento could.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't have the knowledge of the economics and how your city utility does. I think that's Mr. Flanagan's. But I would add, as a precursor to Mr. Flanagan's response, is that the expansion into this area would be a partnership with Flagler County, and it would be at no cost to the city of Palm Coast. And that's for the line and the infrastructure to be put in place, and then the users would immediately become available. So, Steve, I don't understand the economics of your utility company and if there is a profit or not.
Well, I think two of the main dollar magnitude, if you will, items are the having a wastewater plant down south of State Road 100 is something we will need in the future. And being able to acquire this piece of property as that site that's already zoned and set up for a wastewater plant, so you don't have that negative connotation that at some point we, as the city, have to go find a piece of property to put a wastewater plant on, and the surrounding property owners all say, no, not near me. So I think that's one really major benefit that we have here by getting that wastewater plant or future wastewater plant site, and knowing that it will not just serve these customers or these five property owners, we will actually service other city customers, other even current city customers south of State Road 100. So in my viewpoint, that is really one of the major things that always made me look at this possibility very positively.
Can you answer, what about adding, since the easements are going to be granted through this agreement, and it's certainly going to be beneficial, you know, from the landowner's perspective, again, to get off of those package plants that are very costly and not good for the environment. Is there a way that that one dig to do and lay the conduit for our fiber network and extend that to add customers?
Oh, it would make, Mayor, it would make all the sense in the world when we're doing the waterline work and looping the waterline in from Citation Parkway up onto Old Kings Road and then State Road 100 to install at minimum a conduit in there that fiber could be pulled in the future or have fiber put in at the same time.
Yeah, good idea, Ms. Mayor.
Yeah.
Also, Mayor, if I could, this is NASA. We've been standardizing our utility easements to add broader language so that we can also include fiber or other types of infrastructure within these utility easements to the city. So in this case, we would make sure that we did that. So from a legal perspective, if it was decided it couldn't happen now, the ability would be there within the easement language to put it in the future.
And if I can, one other thing, I do believe the well field issue is also a major issue. Our southern well field has very limited supply, and for us to compete with other surrounding cup holders is a big issue for us. So the more we can limit or keep you know, work with others so that they aren't trying to pull out of the same aquifer as we are and impact each other, that's a major benefit for our water supply.
Steve, to that very issue, we shut down these other utilities. They no longer withdraw from well fields that are adjacent to ours, but we are now going to have to draw additional water. So are we simply just taking over that capacity that those other smaller utilities had?
No, you make a good point, Mr. Netz, that yes, that means that we'll have to go and find additional waters, but we won't be competing for that water with a nearby provider. But we will, and you know, in the future, water will become more and more expensive as we try and find alternate sources.
Do you remember the offshore 3-mile-out ship that was discussed? We tried to create a utility conglomerate.
I hope we never get there, but amen. You know, time, you know, it's definitely going to get more and more expensive to try and find source water or raw water.
So the wells that we're talking about now, are these relatively shallow wells or are these into the aquifer?
I don't know if Reggie can speak to the view locate KOA wells, or I don't have a whole lot of information right now about their well depths or where they're pulling that for their
wells. What about our wells in the south?
Our wells are Floridan intermediates for water plant 2, which is the adjacent well field that we're using.
So, Vice Mayor Clufus, did you have a statement? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just piggybacking on what you had said about the dig once policy and how it's more ideal to do it all at once. But yeah, I can forego that comment. But yeah, overall, that was, I just want to say thanks.
Well, thank you.
I think for the presentation, we're going to turn this thing over to Jason for the key points and then try and answer any additional questions that you would have.
So, Mayor, City Council, you covered most of these items through your questions, except for one which has to do with Eagle Lakes. And Eagle Lakes paid impact fees to the county. So as part of any interlocal moving forward, we will need the county to transfer the value of those commitments to the city. And that may be in some sort of a combination of payment or real property. There's the two sites that are already identified, and there may be additional to make up the actual value of the commitments already made to Eagle Lakes. Other than that, we've covered everything else on this slide already, so we can try to answer any more questions that you may have.
Jason, what are you looking for at the end of this discussion?
For consensus that we should go re-engage the county and try to work out an interlocal agreement with them that makes sense for us moving forward to provide the service.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments, Council? I think again, considering the timing of this, I'm in support of engaging the county and finding out again where they are with FGUA, what their position is with an interlocal agreement, and then ironing out the details where, then a lot of those questions would be answered. Councilmember Cuff.
Yeah, what you said, Mayor. Again, my fundamental question is we're talking about re-engaging the county. I mean, is the county trying to re-engage us, or are we going to go there and try to sell them this? I'm still not entirely clear, and I should have done my homework with the city manager before today's meeting, but why is this item on our agenda? Who's driving the bus?
So the county's on board. At this moment in time, the city's driving the bus. You know, we had left an interlocal agreement. We renewed it twice since I've been here with council. We let it expire through the COVID period, and staff felt it appropriate to ask that question. One, because we are on the hook, we are in the water business. If council felt some agreement that there were ancillary benefits to the city, to the utility, to the community and region, that we didn't want to let that question get stale, move past the point where FGUA had a contract and it's moot, it's no issue, you know, there's no point. Now we're negotiating with FGUA to provide them bulk water or some other odd scenario that we don't know what the outcome could be. Had meetings with the county several times, including Jerry by way of Al Hadid is involved in this conversation high level again at this point. And it was decided the next step in light of an agreement, we just let staff let expire, is let us ask the question of our policymakers to move this forward or just let it die. And so that's where we're at, Mr. Cook.
Well, I would say let's just move forward and not let it go, a year or two. Let's try to figure out the details of it to see if it makes sense. Does the council objecting to that?
I think that's, at this point, no matter who's driving the bus, I think should be no reason why we and the county couldn't get together and iron this thing out. It's in the interest of the city and the county. Let's get together. Let's work it out.
The rest of the council?
That sounds good to me. I just, I just want to make sure we're not trying to sell them something they're not interested in buying. And then my question would be, well, why are we trying to sell it? Since the environmental benefits certainly are plausible and ones that I would support, but otherwise I don't Again, I'm not sure why this is coming up now. My apologies to staff for not being a little more eager to get the background on this, but this is a classic example of an item that I really wish we had been briefed on other than in a Zoom workshop meeting, but that's as it is. I think we need to go back, sit down with the county and see what can be done.
Well, I can tell you since Mr. Cameron set foot in Flagler County and became the administrator, first discussion I ever had with him was the question, why is the county in the utility business? And I believe he's been trying to figure that out since. He's been here. I don't know how long that's been. But in my conversations with him, that has always been a topic of discussion. That has always been a question he's had. And it's my understanding he's literally looking for a consensus from us to figure out how he either finalizes an agreement with FGUA and the city just provides the water, or we look at a more of a regional approach. And if I'm incorrect, those are my conversations I've had with him.
My conversations mirror yours.
But I'm also in consensus, just FYI, and I see that there are some county representatives on the Zoom call today, so yep, I am in line with you guys. As long as we're not pitching something that they're not trying to pick up, then I think that's the right initiative.
Mr. Cuff said he wants to be certain that we're not trying to sell something to the county. I want to be very certain that the county's not trying to sell something to us. There's a difference between buying an old beat-up 1947 Dodge and buying a nice old Mercedes. I want to be sure that at the end of the day, the city is whole by this. I understand completely the environmental benefits. I understand completely the need for residents in Flagler County to have a dependable, high-quality utility system. But I don't want it to be at the expense of the city of Palm Coast. So, continuing the discussions, fine.
Absolutely.
Yep. I agree. Okay. Do you have clear direction?
I do. Thank you. We'll get engaged with the county and figure out what keep chatting and see if we can come to terms on what an interlocal could look like to formalize the conversations.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
We'll now move, that concludes that agenda.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now move to agenda item number E2, which is a presentation of the annual floodplain management plan report and stormwater updates.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Per this council's direction and the strategic action planning process, we are under Priority D5 to provide biannual updates to the City Council and our community regarding the master stormwater plan, and Communico projects are being managed and prioritized. So to do that, here today we have Denise Bevan and Donald Schrager.
Can I tell you how happy I am that we have updates? I'll say it again.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council members. Denise Bevan, City Administration Coordinator. I also serve in the capacity of a certified floodplain manager and our CRS coordinator. So we're going to get right into the presentation. Per council's direction, thank you, Mr. Morton, you asked for biannual updates specific to our master stormwater plan. We're doing that today. But also another prong to this presentation is to deliver the highlights from our CRS program. So I'm going to start with giving some highlights of what the community rating system program is. Then we're going to talk about the report. That's also a requirement of participating in the program. Then I'm actually going to dive in a little bit deeper and talk about our mitigation projects and how we work with Flagler County Emergency Management. And Ms. Laura Nelson, Senior Planner with Flagler County Emergency Management Services, is on the line. And if you have any questions about that program or our relationship with how we get these mitigation projects done, she's available. And then we're going to turn it over to Don Schrager, our Stormwater Operations Manager, and he's going to navigate us through the master plan, what we're doing now, some targeted projects, our enhanced stormwater program, and also how we're engaging our citizens. And again, this is a showcase presentation by a physical production of a report that's posted on our website. And not only to educate, you know, the public, but also revisit the importance of mitigation. So what is a community rating system program? It's voluntary, it's incentive-based, and you must participate in the National Flood Insurance Program to start with. So the National Flood Insurance Program, a community has to enter into those minimum requirements of the program through FEMA. And why that's important is not only from the value of that to our citizens, but frankly, if you're not involved in the program, your citizens cannot get flood insurance. And the rewards to communities is basically as you do more activities, that's improving your resiliency and minimizing your flood risk and outreaching to your community. So here's the goals of the CRS: reduce and avoid flood damage to insurable property, strengthen and support the insurance aspects of the NFIP, and encourage comprehensive floodplain and stormwater management. So these are just some highlights of the activities. There's 19 activities in the program. We participate in 17. The other two are levees and dams, and that's because we're not applicable to those standards. So the first is there's a heavy weight on the program to do outreach. Reach out to your community, reach out to your businesses. So we're going to talk a little bit about how we do that. And then also flood damage reduction. So the local mitigation strategy program, which we'll get into, is serving that capacity. It's our roadmap to reducing impacts in our community. So here's just a general timeline for Palm Coast. We joined the NFIP in 2002, and the class ratings through the CRS program, as you go down, you actually are performing more and getting better. So in 2004, we had the Class 7 designation, and most recently a Class 4. And how that translates for being an incentive program is that 30% discount actually comes to our residents just because of what we're doing as a community for those in the special flood hazard areas, which are the high-risk zones. And then we've actually maxed out the additional discount for outside the special flood hazard area, which is 10%. That's as much as you can get.
So Denise, this is really for the coastal high hazard areas in our city?
No, it's okay. Inland.
Oh, okay. Great.
So we do
there
have...
Are homes even, I'm sorry, there are homes even in Grand Haven that we are in flood zones too. Denise, I have a quick question, and perhaps you can piggyback this on the backside, but this is great information to be able to get out to the public too, because I'm sure a lot of insurance companies don't automatically lower their flood insurance rates. Is that true, or is that kind of... that's hard to say.
So, great question. So this information we do get out to the public, not only through the report, but it is a primary goal to reach out to those institutions, those professional institutions. And you'll see in the upcoming slides the timing of those events. So we actually reach out directly to the real estate brokers and the insurance providers.
Gotcha. I think the lower left-hand corner is a kudo for you and your committee. 1,500 communities, only 18 with a rating of 4 or better. We are in the top, I can't do the arithmetic, 1%.
Don't ask me either. So this is a graphic that I pulled from FEMA's website, and you'll see there's 3 stars. Palm Coast is a Class 4, Cutler Bay is a Class 4, and Ocala is a Class 3. So within the state of Florida, which is, of course, one of the primary leaders in participation, we do rank as one of the highest. And thank you for that, Councilmember Netz, but it's a citywide effort, and it also is very much contingent on our strong relationship with Flagler County Emergency Management. So the outreach activities, this is just a snippet of what we do specific to the Community Rating System Program. When It wasn't COVID. We were at the Flagler County Home Show. We've actually registered in good faith that we'll be there again in 2021. But you see here is a photograph. We actually had our customer service representatives promoting Palm Coast Connect and stating how that can be a benefit of staying aware of changes or putting in concerns. And at that time, certified floodplain managers, which we have a total of six, do issue flood zone determinations. So you can actually come right up to us, ask, hey, this is my property, and we can tell you what flood zone you're in. Annual utility bill insert, so that goes out to all of our account holders in February and March. It's just an informational pamphlet that talks about the importance of flood insurance, how to get in touch with the city, how to voice concerns that you may have with flooding. We also offer to come out to your property, look at ways to minimize flood risk, meaning moving your gutters away from the house, certain things like that. And then annually, we send out direct mail to those properties that did construct in those zones. And as Vice Mayor Klupas requested, we do coordinate directly with those insurance providers and real estate brokers through a mail out. We also piggyback on events and talk about the importance of natural floodplain function, which is a core goal as well. And we use the annual Intracoastal Waterway Cleanup, which is coming very quickly. It's on the 12th of September this year. And then also working with our youth, talking to them about water quality, the importance of wetlands, coastal flooding. As you may acknowledge, our youth are our best proponents when they're talking to their parents and other adults. And then we do other things throughout the year. Very strong and great effort on our communications team with social media. Definitely seeing a lot come through over as we're now in within hurricane season, and various speaking engagements. And this is it's activity 510 in the CRS program, and it's called the floodplain management plan. And as most communities do in the state of Florida, they utilize the local mitigation strategy, which is a plan coordinated through Flagler County Emergency Management. It was last update was in 2011, and I know we're coming up with another update. And you'll see here the goals. Won't read through all these, but it's specific to minimizing impacts from hazards. So we're talking about flood risk today, but we also have wildfires and other hazards that the plan addresses and also supports mitigation activities. So Laura Nelson at Flagler County Emergency Management, she's a steward of the program. She really helps make sure the community partners are involved and engage. If a grant opens, she sends out an email, lets us know what's happening. I believe our next meeting as a work group is this Friday. And then you also see here our other community participators in the CRS is Flagler County and Flagler Beach along with us. And we're all participating in the community visit through ISO, which is a way to recertify that class designation. So the working group that I reference acts as a local coordination committee to support and recommend projects for various grant programs. And what you see here, which is a little tough to read, but in the report, lists all those active projects, and that's across the county. So the group's core consists of representative of local municipalities, local organizations, and county departments. And as already referenced, we have an upcoming meeting that's going to talk about, different activities, but really trying to have that routine communication and network with everyone through our Flagler County area. And through that work group, we regularly review the priority list and revise it and re-rank accordingly. And this is a highlight. Our current hazard mitigation grant program funded projects. So these hazard mitigation grants are basically a catalyst from a declaration. So Hurricane Matthew, Hurricane Irma. So you see here City Hall generator going in May, and then also the other generators that we're working on through utility, including another project called Manhole Dish Project to reduce that inflow and infiltration. And what that translates into is a very rewarding program where FEMA basically funds 75% and City of Palm Coast funds 25%. And that's the overview of total cost at $2.08 million, roughly, that really summarizes what we have in the queue right now, according to the previous slide. And from here, I'm going to turn it over to Don Schrager, our Stormwater Operations Manager.
Good morning, Ms. Mayor, the Council, and everybody else listening. I'm actually happy to do this. This is almost a story of evolution. A couple of years ago, we started with the idea of the master plan. All good programs start with a good plan. So I'm going to take some time. I'm going to go over that plan. And the backbone of it was the modeling project and how we now use that to come up with a CIP and how we've evolved into our enhanced stormwater program. Because now we're past planning stage and we're actually at the implementation stage. We've made great strides in our ditch maintenance program. And some of the shortcomings we had with maintenance were due to lack of proper equipment. And so over the years, last couple of years, we've actually acquired some specialized equipment that we need to do some of this stuff and the personnel to run it. We have a very comprehensive stormwater plan now. And as we've talked about throughout this presentation, citizen engagement has always been important to us. We've always found the benefit of it. I'm going to talk a little bit more of how we're trying to deal with COVID and citizen engagement, and then also we're working on transparency. Next slide, please. The foundation of the overall plan was stormwater model. We wanted to take a more scientific and engineering look at problems and become more proactive than reactive. So we put together a stormwater model. This model provides far better data than the FEMA floodplain model does. Excuse me. And then it also allows us to run scenarios so we can actually see potential problem areas that field observations or citizen call-ins haven't identified. And we can use that data to put together a very comprehensive long-term capital plan, because we can now run scenarios. We swap out a pipe. Do we get a better benefit by swapping out a pipe for a larger one? And how will that impact downstream? So we can do that ahead of time. And this will always be here. It'll be continuing to be a living document. We'll just keep rolling with it. Every time we do some work or every time we have a rain event, we plug in that data, and it just makes the model more accurate. More data.
Hey, Don. Don, does this overlay onto ArcGIS? Is that the interface we're looking at on the right-hand side there?
I'm not an expert on this. This is a very complex program. They pull up graphics from it that we can overlay, but not exact. I don't know the specifics, but I don't think it would be something we could do, readily.
It looks very data-driven. I just wanted to say good job. This looks awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of hard work from a lot of different people and a lot from IT and some consultants. But now it's up and running and we're happy with it.
Awesome. Next.
And what this actually generates is the bottom graphic, actually gives us basically a map where the water goes in any given scenario. So in the upper one, same area, now we can actually run it and see where during an event where the water is going to go. And those highlighted areas are three areas that are crossings where the water leaves. So we can actually change them out virtually without actually having to go dig up the roads. We can see how big of a pipe we put in, and not just how that will affect the problematic area, but the one downstream as well. So we can actually see the best cost benefit to what we think will work. So it does provide, as I stated, better data than FEMA's mapping, and it allows us to identify projects that we wouldn't normally have come up with. Obviously, base flood elevations come in, and how this impacts globally. Our program historically has always focused on individual, and this program reaches out globally, citywide. We've always said start downstream. If you improve the canals, the ditches work better. If you improve the ditches, the swales work better. So we take a citywide and a neighborhood approach more than just an address approach. Next slide, please. One of the fundamental issues that we saw was the disconnect. We had people originally in City Hall and at Public Works, and our equipment is at Public Works. So there wasn't a good cohesion of people. So we moved to the utility site, and this was a great example of collaboration. An in-house talent, it shows the amount of resources that we have that are willing to help. The design work was done in-house by our own people. Site work was done by our in-house people. And then all the renovations to the outbuildings have been done by our people. And this created a very strong sense of ownership to the people. Quick short story, when we first got here, there was some field people who, I spoke to one gentleman because he was walking to the fuel depot to use the portal light over there because he didn't want to go into the trailers because that was for admin. And it was a mindset that we had, that a lot of people had, and we were trying to break that down. Now the collaboration is there, we've spent enough time together. Field guys know they can come in and talk to anybody. Anybody's at their disposal. They can come in and talk to me anytime they need to, Mr. Peel anytime they need to, any of the staff members. Nobody's out of reach. All they need to pick up the phone. So we've very much gelled because we're all together, and it makes for a lot of smooth work and a lot less delays. Instead of trying to wait to go through three different people to get an answer from somebody, you can just pick up the phone or walk into somebody's office and get the answer you need. Next slide, please. So we've evolved. We were out of the planning stage, and we actually took the direction that we were given, and we actually started enhancing our stormwater programs across the board. Our soil maintenance guys still remain impressive. At the time of this report, they have done 32 miles, and if you figure the bucket on that machine is about 3 feet wide, that's an impressive number for two crews. We actually get some compliments, actually, from people when they've done work out there, because the guys are actually friendly, and they will actually talk to people. Our pipe program, moving forward. We always, somewhere in this city, there's either a pipe going in the ground, being finished putting in the ground, or getting started to get put in the ground, which is one of the backbones of this system. And all these pipes were put in at the same time, and with over 1,500 of them around the city, it's a daunting process. We have one vac pump. We clean pipes under driveways, which only made sense. If we go and clean the soils out, we need to clean the pipes out. But with bringing on a second one, now we're actually cleaning under the roads and cleaning out catch basins that have been clogged that have never been done before. Our freshwater canal program is still underway, always has been. One of the biggest changes was to our ditch maintenance program. We had always mowed the ditches, and we were using prisoners to mow them twice a year. Well, since the enhanced program started, after they mow, we have a spray program. We go in and we actually use herbicide to further retard the growth, so we don't get as much growth until they get back there again. And with getting new equipment and new personnel, we've actually graded more ditch lines. Some of these ditch lines haven't been touched since they were originally put in. So we've managed to open them up and clean them out. We've put some tools in our toolboxes. Bottom left-hand picture. It's not always feasible or economical to pull a pipe out of the ground. Sometimes if you're under Belterre, Palm Coast Parkway, or one of the major thoroughfares, there's a lot of utilities in the way, it's just not economically feasible. So we've done some what are known as trenchless technologies. The picture there is actually a cast in place. The machine actually sprays basically a concrete substance around it and hardens in place. We also have cured in place, where they basically push a bag through it, fill it up, and it's a resin, and it hardens into a new pipe. And then we just slip line it, put a smaller pipe in when that's feasible. One of the biggest advantages that we've recognized, bottom right-hand picture, glaring example, the left-hand pipe is half blocked. It's been that way for years. We had no way to reach it. We had no way to do it properly. So now we bought, it's called a Minzy mug, but we call it Spider because it will actually walk down in there. And we can actually get down and you can see very clearly the difference. You open up the pipe, it's going to work better. So with the right people and the right equipment, it's been impressive. Next slide, please.
I have a quick question. This actually is extraordinarily impressive, and I'm very appreciative of this comprehensive approach. Have you gone through a needs analysis on, since we have this brand new plan that we've been working on, resource-driven as opposed to acceleration of different projects in certain critical areas of our community that are in need of additional immediate drainage?
I'm not sure I quite understand the question. Are you talking, have we looked at individual areas to see where more need may be necessary?
Yeah, I know since we had three storms back-to-back, that certainly lent itself to seeing areas of our community that perhaps were in need of updating or addressing some infrastructure areas. Do you make the decisions based on the areas and how much you can do? I'm assuming solely on the resources and equipment you have available, and then you allocate those resources to those projects. How do you balance all of that, and how is it priority driven?
Well, what you're talking about is what I spoke about with the model. We can run scenarios and see. Now, obviously, it starts with something happens, and we hear of an issue, but then we can run scenarios through it and see where a greater need lies. And I think we're talking more capital,
yes,
than our general maintenance, because our general maintenance are all on citywide programs, so everybody gets touched at some point. So when we run these things, they almost all run at the same time. We can run them through, and a lot of times contributing factors end up being funding. We're going to talk about one shortly. Very expensive, but part of the analysis has to be, is it, and it's tough to say because tough decisions have to be made. Is it just an inconvenience, or is somebody's home actually in danger? And obviously, those areas are going to take priority. That's what the stormwater system's for, to protect people and their property. So if we find something where it's really going to impact property, that's going to take priority. We have a lot that are inconvenient, We are very, very fortunate. You can watch the news with any storm event, and a lot of our surrounding neighbors have severe flooding issues. We do not. You know, you can see pictures on the news of people with 2 feet of water in their homes when we don't. We could have water in the road, and it makes it inconvenient, but people aren't losing their homes over it. So our system works very well. And I know I'm skirting around the issue, but sometimes tough decisions have to be made. We do only have so many resources and so much personnel and equipment to go around.
Yeah, so that was my question. We're always going to have a need for maintenance, always. We own the swale system and the drainage stormwater system. So annual budgetary items, when you're looking at pieces of equipment that would help alleviate some of the areas of concern, I mean, when do you make those decisions? Say, is it something that we outsource, or is it something we try to do in-house with further equipment that we're going to need anyway in the future? How do you make those decisions?
A lot of times decisions like that are made, and you'll see as we progress through like this budget cycle and the next one and the next one, a lot of the equipment that was purchased thus far is because we saw a need like that, something that we could help, and we just didn't have it. So you do the analysis. Do we hire somebody and get the equipment, or do we put it out to bid? And putting out to bid becomes longer and generally more expensive long term than if we buy the equipment and have it here and we can keep using it. So we do go through that, and knowing what our funding limitations are, we get together as a group and decide what needs to be done first. And when it comes to how to utilize them, it's the same way. Just because the ditches are on a rotation, if we see one that's bad, and like the one you saw in the picture, we'll break off from that and we'll go do it. We have that ability now. So moving forward, we do have a long-term plan, and we use the information, the data we have, do the worst first, I guess is a good way to put it, and then put the rest off, but make those decisions, and we make them as a group, and they're hard decisions to make.
That's helpful. Thank you. Yeah, it is. You know, again, I was just trying to figure out your best approach, and considering you're doing an analysis of our infrastructure that was all put in place at the same time.
Right.
Frankly, you know, some of it fails due to, you know, damage from storms. Some of it fails due to age, and some of it is probably in better condition just because. But you have to start somewhere, and I just didn't know, you know, how you view that as a team.
And Ms. Mayor, you bring up a good point. I've been asked before by the public, like, how do we prepare for a storm? Stormwater prepares for a storm all year long. The best way to prepare for a storm is to maintain the system. And now that we're maintaining it with the right equipment and people, and we have better tools, as we find problems, we're addressing them. They don't get overlooked. Whether or not they get addressed right away, or they just get brought in and become part of our long-term capital plan. But we do those analyses with Mr. Peel and the other managers. We'll sit together and actually get input from each other and staff of where do we need to go next. And
always find that our residents are mostly grateful for, you know, the services we provide. I just think they want to know when, and when their expectations, to set those expectations, and that's where that communications comes in as a really integral part of this is, you know, that's got to be key, because again, you know, we get residents that often ask us about their swales, and
absolutely.
Now that they understand there's more of a different approach, considering the canals and ditches have been made a priority for, you know, cleaning those out for the first time in a long time, and that helps alleviate it. I think it's just the more we can definitely communicate that to our residents, they know that we're being very proactive.
Absolutely. And I'm in a couple slides. I believe it's the next slide, actually. I'm going to talk about how we do communicate with the public. Our best tool in the toolbox is education. And we have things in place, and we have people in place to help educate the public. And you're right. I actually just read an email this morning, somebody thanking us for the work we did next to their house. Several years ago, there was not a lot of those. We got more hate mail, if you will, than thank yous. Our crews get not a lot, but we do get people reaching out saying thank you for the work they've done. A lot of times it's they've been waiting for a long time, so when they finally get there, and then our people on site are pleasant and willing to talk to people and very informed, so the general public appreciates it.
Great.
That answer your questions?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
You're welcome. Moving on to some projects that we had on the go, whether they were from the master plan, original identified master plan, or just ones that we came across. We are constantly moving through projects. Just like any other capital plan, we always have projects that are either in the conceptual phase, they're in the design phase, they're in the budgeting phase, construction phase, or the closeout phase. We have projects all over. So the first one on the list was actually one that we just finished. In the F section, we had one concrete line ditch in the city. It was a maintenance nightmare, but it was also a safety concern. So we talked about doing this for many years, and design was done last year, and construction just finished up. Those are the upper two graphics. The actual residents that are there are very happy with it. I wasn't directly involved with the project, but I didn't hear of any real complaints about the project. I think everybody was just happy to get it done. Belter culvert replacement. This is one that was just found because we stepped up our maintenance. This was south of 100. It was closed off for a while, so we changed out the culverts under there before we had a collapse. It's not in a very populated area, not in an area we would have done a lot of work in. So once we stepped up our program, we actually came across it. K6 Weir and Smith Trail, that's one of the last of our old style weirs, and Smith Trail is the major crossing right at the structure, so we're going to do both at the same time. Again, it went through all the phases, now we're in the construction process. E section, canal dredging, we always said, start at the bottom, work your way up. But some of these projects, like other capital projects, are long-term, just in the planning and execution stage. When you talk about dredging, there's design work and permitting problems, and this one is now on the priority list for SRF loans. It is an expensive proposition. L4 weir replacement, this was one we always identified. The L4 weir is the one down in Royal Palms, and it's the last structure prior to draining about a third of our water into Graham Swamp. So how do we improve it was always the question. How do we get water out of the city faster? And so we're in the design phase now. We came up with some concepts and now doing the design. Cobra Lane is a graphic you saw earlier. I always kind of knew there was a problem there. This one was one of the original ones that was picked out. So we went, it's a lot more complicated than it would actually seem. So we finally came up with a direction to go in, and it's into the design phase now. Lunder Waterway Capacity. That was another one the city council and previous city councils heard. When you can't get water to get out of the city any faster, then you just find places to put it short term. So they're called capacity projects. And we're actually working on several right now, whether they're in a conceptual stage or the design phase, and we're actually working on purchasing some small little parcels at the moment to try to get one underway. So moving on, next slide, please. Sorry, I forgot to show my phone. When we talk about citizen engagement, our best
way to engage the citizens is to have our guys in the field. The inspector goes out, whether somebody contacts us through Palm Coast Connect or just calls in, however it happens, the inspectors are generally the first line to talk to these people. They're extremely well informed. And sometimes all it takes is for somebody to explain how the system works and explain how our maintenance programs work. And the majority of people are okay with it. Once they hear and understand, they're good. And we did some community outreach about a year ago now, or even longer. We had planned to do some more, but COVID kind of threw a wrench in those works. The upcoming year, we see the value in it, so we're going to have to rethink how we do that. We'll probably do something virtual. And when you talk about up-to-date and live, and Mr. Kloof, as you're talking about GIS, we've always had a GIS layer for our swale work. So we always were able to identify, nothing ever gets lost has always been the message. Once it's on there, it doesn't leave. And our field people and even customer services had access to this so they could see where we were at. About, I believe it's 2 weeks ago now, we actually made this go live to the public. It's actually on the stormwater page of the website. The only difference between what the citizen sees and what staff sees is that it's not editable. They can't change anything. They can see everything, but they can't change it. But basically, the functionality is the same. Including, this is just a snapshot, just for your reference, everything in green is what our swale crews have already graded, starting about 2 years ago, I think. Not quite 2 years ago when we started the GIS layer. And everything in red is what still has to be done. There's another layer on here where we identify where the swale crews are going to go so they can actually turn that layer on and see where we're going next. The schedule is on there. So the information's out there and it's real time. We're going to be moving forward with our other maintenance programs. We already are moving forward with our other maintenance programs to do this. Ditch maintenance, canal maintenance, pipe replacements, capital projects. In the future, they'll all have something similar to this available to the public.
I have a question. I mean, so again, is this on the Palm Coast Connect tile?
This one is not yet on the Palm Coast Connect tile. This is something new we started very recently with the tools they had. Again, we were getting a lot of stormwater questions, and they would say, hey, we have this route maintenance. I actually had a conversation with Don Schrager, and I said, well, rather than us holding that information, as we look to keep expanding how we want to message, resource, and map, let's not hold that data. We have the capability to publish it right now. Yep. And so for now, it's published. It's out there and accessible. We want to be able to point people to it at this moment. As we continue to figure out how we want to map and what that solution is going to be long-term to translate this data. I don't want to get into it here. GIS has been on a really long time. I think everyone knows I'm not a huge fan of GIS for a lot of reasons. And as part of our process moving forward, we're looking at what opportunities we have. Again, as council knows, how do we start bringing this information together in easier ways for the public, for staff, for everyone to access?
Well, because I was thinking, since this is laid out, that's the perfect time, again, to do some of those GeoPoint notifications to the neighborhoods that expect your stormwater team to be out in your neighborhood. This is the work they're doing this week. It's great to do push notifications rather than just having our residents go and look for it. We have the capability today to do that. It might be worthwhile connecting with our residents in that way. And then we're sort of including them in the process.
Ms. Mayor, to your point, the last few capital projects we've done, we've started moving in that direction. And the previous slide that showed the concrete ditch line, those residents were notified in that way. And so everybody was aware way ahead of time. There wasn't really any surprises to anybody. It worked well. It's still a little bit of a learning curve for some of us, but we're getting there. And it's definitely a direction we're going to move into in the future.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, because again, you know, if we have all of our utility bill, I mean, 80% of them are online, pay online, and they also have emails associated with that. It would be interesting to see how we take that and merge those files and then take the actual street addresses using the GeoPoint and being very specific. You know, those could be set up internally and built out pretty easily to do those push notifications just using, you know, Einstein and other analytical tools that give the city the ability to forecast where anybody's going to be in one particular week.
True. Interesting. Okay. Definitely something we'll work, because we're always looking to get the message out there. In the past, we used to get a lot of phone calls. Hey, somebody's out behind my house. Somebody's out next to me. What are they doing? And we always struggled with the best way to get the notifications out. So we're always looking for the best way. You know, way back in the day when you used to put ads in the newspaper, not everybody reads the newspaper. Door hangers, not everybody uses their front door. So, yeah, we're always looking for better ways to contact people. So that's,
And you're right. Nothing beats that in-person touch because, you know, I've spoken to some members of your team internally a while back. They really do know their zones, right? Their neighborhoods, and certainly they get to know the residents. And I think that is of great benefit that we don't want to ever lose.
No, definitely not. Just to finish up on this slide. Like I said, there's usually an average of 700 work orders at any given time. When it's not raining, that number goes way down. And when it's raining out, it goes up again. Our crews do about 15,000 linear feet a month. Again, at the three foot wide bucket or so is amazing. And one of the fundamentals of the swale program is that we're on a two-month rotation. We do what we can in 2 months. We identify prior to that so you can see where we're going to go on the schedule. And at the end of the 2 months, we move on. That way we can spread the resources across the city and not just have them parked in one area for an indefinite amount of time. It's the only fair, equitable, and efficient way to do it. So it's been working fairly well, and when that's actually explained to people, when they're not in their area, most people understand it. Most people get it. And like I said, one of my most valuable resources is my inspectors and the field guys, because they're very good at giving that message out and talking to people. So I always appreciate them. Next slide, please. So does it work? 2020, we were nominated for the Outstanding Achievement Award by the Florida Stormwater Association. This isn't just about the work. It's about everything. It's the program as a whole. Funding, capital plans, personnel, everything goes into it. So it was great to be nominated and even better to receive the award for the whole program overall. We're in good company. A lot of the bigger communities get this stuff, I guess. City of Claremont, Orange County, City of West Palm Beach. So we were very, very happy. Unfortunately, we were supposed to get, I believe it was June or July, was supposed to be the conference, which was canceled due to COVID. So I guess the formal presentation is supposed to be at their winter conference in December, which will be virtual. But we were very happy, very proud of the work all of our people do. And this is just acknowledgement that not just us, but with the support and the backing of council and the guidance of council, this worked. So,
well, congratulations. I mean, that truly is outstanding, and we're very proud of each and every one of you.
Well, and thank you to council and the administration for having the faith in the site, foresight to understand this and let us do what we need to do. And trust in us to do it. Next slide, please. So where do we go from here? What's on our horizon? Our MS4 permitting start in the near future. We'll start to be talking about water quality issues. We're already working on a water sampling program that should be coming online hopefully this coming year. More increased storage. It's hard to find because it involves property, and there's not a whole lot of property out there. Replacing the infrastructure, obviously, we're going to keep doing that. It's a huge infrastructure. So we will focus on just what the mayor was talking about earlier. How do we prioritize? We will prioritize the best we can and do as much as we can with the resources we have available. And it's the whole system as a whole is about reducing flood risk to our citizens. We've done a very good job thus far, but there's always room for improvement. So we're going to keep trying to make those improvements as best we can. We've started to share some of this modeling data. We have this fantastic model that we use. So sharing with the development community actually only makes sense. If somebody comes in with a development, they can actually use our data to refine theirs and see how their system will interact with ours and vice versa. So we're really going to try to move forward more with that kind of collaboration. And then as we just, more real-time data out there for the public. We have it. We just have to finish putting the polishing touches on it and get it out there for people and then get the message out that it is available. So that's about it for me. From here, I'm going to turn it over to Denise, let her wrap things up.
Thanks, Don. So we have one final highlight just on the merits of the last bullet in the last slide of looking at data and sharing that with the public, and this one's brand new. So I recall Chief Forte during one of our previous name storms coordinating with myself and our stormwater professionals and saying, hey, do we know how high the water gets, you know, the surges, and you know, we could really glean a lot off of that, you know, even from a critical evacuation standpoint. And so what you see here are four brand new points where we are collecting that high water data, and it's real time. We are in the works of sharing that publicly. We already have where you can go on and see our canal water levels, which are all definitely elements of the CRS program communicating that risk to our citizens. And what you specifically see in the pictures is Long Creek Nature Preserve off of Palm Harbor Parkway. The blue arrows are indicating where the actual devices are located. And Long Creek Nature Preserve is just thoroughly interesting because you have that tidal influence from Long Creek and in the saltwater canals, but you also have a freshwater Big Mulberry branch that is discharging into College Waterway. So you just have that really dynamic environment going on. So you see here on the image that actually shows a yellow line, with Hurricane Matthew, we had a strand line at 7 feet. So that yellow line is basically where we had debris fall within the embankment. And for myself, I look at that to communicate risk to our citizens and the need of flood insurance. And in the aerial that has a red and white line, I know that's a little tough to see, but what's really interesting is those two lines are indicating, first, the base flood elevation established by FEMA, which is 7 feet, and then the 1 foot below that, which is a red line, which is where the devices actually alert us. So as that high water is moving up into the upland areas, we are getting that information real time. And just again, with that surge from Hurricane Matthew, it was right at FEMA's base flood elevation. It was very interesting. So, you know, that information, you know, our citizens don't have to be reminded about the risk of hurricanes or of that nature, but some things we can't control in our stormwater system. So we try to communicate that need of protecting your property through your own decision-making process. And with that, just like to close and open for any additional questions about the CRS program or anything that you heard today.
Any questions or comments? Just great job. Always impressed, with the presentation, but really the level of detail certainly I think helps each of us understand what our initiatives are doing and how they're working. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Holland and council members. And just a final takeaway, the annual report is being posted to the website, released to the public and media for their consumption.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Good stuff. Okay. We'll now go to agenda item number E3, which is a presentation of Public Works Facility Master Plan Update Validation.
Thank you. I think the word validation is in there because there's some potentially new assumptions. I know Carl wanted to share today where we're at in the design process, where we're at in the planning process, and the acceleration of the stormwater program that we just heard about has created some conflicts maybe with design, as we have ramped up significantly and quickly the amount of white fleet or fleet equipment and heavy equipment that we have. So to walk through here today and some of the decision points and just to dust off kind of where we're headed, we do have a presentation with some background. Carl, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm here today to kind of give you an update of where we are with the Public Works Facility project. Matt Mansell's also on board. We'll speak to some of the slides as well. As you know, this project is a team effort. We have a construction management firm, Gilbain Construction, involved at the beginning because we want their input up front, working through our cost-benefit scenarios and value engineering proposals, working through some of those design initiatives and options early on, because they do have a bit impact on the cost of the project. We have our design team PON with many sub-consultants on board, including some lead and green consultants helping us look at some of our energy initiatives, solar being one of those. It's really a team effort, lots of staff involvement as well. So the implementation of the master plan, really our phase 1A, I'm referring to it here, is really our design piece, which we're in the middle of right now. And there's several components to that. The first one was to obtain an easement and access to Industry Drive. And that's actually a separate agenda item on your agenda today. I think it comes up next. Jason DiLorenzo will speak to that in a lot more detail, so I won't say a lot about it. I'll point it out when I get to a site plan. We also, part of that involved some site visits of various public works facilities across Florida. So we'll give you some feedback on what we learned from those visits. We also wanted to, and we needed to, update and validate the master plan that was done in 2017. We've had lots of changes and updates. We wanted to use the most current information when we began our design. So that's really our first step. And then we move into the design phase. Phase 1, which is going to be the southern part of the site with the fleet facility and some ancillary items, we take to 100%. And then the rest of the project we take to 60%. So everything was placed correctly. The infrastructure is sized right. So basically, we weren't going to have to redo work. We need to do a certain level of design to plan for the future phases. And then we move to the construction of that first phase. We'd establish a guaranteed maximum price, and then the phase 2 would happen in a future year.
And Carl, I know we spoke as a council that we wanted to make sure that the facility was looked at, again, all applicable LEED certifications, if possible, and then looking at, in the future, alternative fuel, electric hookups, those sorts of things that will prepare us moving forward. I mean, it's already happening.
Correct.
And so we don't want to be behind by building a facility that you may have toured elsewhere that maybe didn't have those priorities listed.
Correct. Yeah, I think one of them, I think, may have been a LEED facility. We are targeting a LEED Silver certification for this particular. We've had a kickoff meeting with the LEED team already. And yes, a lot of what we want to, this building to be is adaptable and expandable to bring in new technology as it arrives. So we're going to have infrastructure in place. We're going to look at emerging technologies and be able to accommodate that in the future. So we're not fixed on status quo. We're going to be able to adapt as well.
Great. Thank you.
So some site visits. I'll let Matt speak to this. You know, he had a lot of members from his team go on this, and some of the design team was there. It was insightful. We learned a lot.
Thanks, Carl, and good morning, Mayor and members of the council. As Carl stated, we did get an opportunity to go visit some of our neighbors and see their facilities. Some of them a little older, and some of them newer. It was nice to kind of be able to look at what was working for them and ask them some of their opinions on what was working, what wasn't working, what they would have done differently. And then we also got a chance to talk about the American Public Works Association certification process. So I'll be coming to you in the near future to talk about kind of where we would like to go with that. But we were able to glean a lot of what's the value added and what was the process for them. And a couple of these facilities were in different stages of that process, so it was nice to hear from them on that. As you can see, Sumter County was one of the older facilities that we viewed, but they were further along with their APWA certification. As a matter of fact, they had already been certified previous years and then recertified. So a lot of lessons learned there and a lot of continuity that they were able to provide. The facility was not really one that I think would lend itself well through design or setup for what we're looking at. But when you're touring other facilities and hearing about what does and doesn't work from other people, we were able to hopefully garner some of that info that, you know, we won't repeat the same mistakes. And a lot of it was really just kind of flow of the facility and how they can move things through. Not just the fleet facility itself, but the public works yard. And we do a lot more in-house, I think, than Sumter County does. They had a lot more contract operations that was done. But it was still nice to get the kind of open book from them on what was going on.
And what does that certification do?
Yes, ma'am, the American Public Works Association, and I am planning a future briefing for you on the program extensively, but the American Public Works Association lays out a certification program that guides you through documenting your processes so that, you know, you can begin to build not just what your standard operating procedures are, but you've documented it, you've had it looked at by other professionals within the organization, and they've been able to tell you, you know, whether that is a benchmark program above and beyond what the standards are, and it outlines every program that you should be following as a public works process.
Is it like an accreditation?
Absolutely, yes, ma'am. Okay. So we've begun that program. We actually have named Marvin Calderon. He's one of my supervisors. He has been named the accreditation manager for our department, and he will be briefing you in the near future. But we're very excited to get started with this accreditation process. So as you go, you look into Manatee County facility, that one was, to me, one of the more interesting sites to tour. They had two different facilities, one that was older, that was actually laid out in a method that would work well for us today, not really maybe 10 years from now, but you know, it gave us a really good starting point to look at how we operate and how we could have a space that worked for us under our current operations, and then how we could improve upon that for future growth and opportunity as well. Their newer facility was actually a bus maintenance facility. I believe that one was LEED certified. It was state of the art. A lot of the things that go into that, you know, the electric vehicle expansion, the utility savings that you can glean from the different opportunities. So definitely a good site there. A little bit laid out differently than what we would need it, because obviously it's buses, but it was nice to hear how some of those lessons learned came together. They are currently in the APWA certification process, kind of in a fledgling point, just like we are. So we're looking to partner with them as we go through that process together and maybe help each other out. And then right here in our own backyard, the St. Johns County facility, they just recently built their facility and opened it up. It was very nice to go up there and hear from them, you know, exactly what worked and what didn't. They definitely had some things that they had to value engineer out of their initial designs, some things that they learned through that VE process as well on how, they had to cut a few things and didn't rethink the configuration of the facility. And then that made some operational challenges as they moved forward. So good to hear that. We also made some great contacts with them, for not just facility planning purposes, but operations as well. So it's nice to get some benchmark and some networking opportunities locally. And then the city of Gainesville, I did not tour this one. It was, I believe, about 18 months ago. Some of our staff went to that facility. Roger LaChance, our fleet supervisor, definitely was impressed by it. So we asked them to pull some of that design information forward into this as well. Next slide. All right, so some of the things we were looking at, like I said, lessons learned, how do they function within the space? What's the operations that they have compared to the operations that we have internally? What they would have done differently, what they wish they might have had along the way. And then for the older facilities, kind of, you know, what they would want as they're looking into a facility, just so we can kind of get a benchmark of what we're looking for and what the prevailing market is looking at the current time. And then, you know, as Carl spoke, the sustainability and technology through the LEED process, definitely learning a lot as we go through that, and what, all the different areas that LEED looks at, and then the infrastructure and other modification requirements that go to future adaptability, like the electric vehicle infrastructure that we would need to include, you know, if not plug and play on day one, but the infrastructure to have available for future growth as we look to expand our alternative fuel vehicle fleet.
So the city hall has also been through the water management district, Water Star. How does that take place, and what is the value and benefit to that project?
The Water Star, it's really more about your landscaping, using Xerox landscaping, and your irrigation needs. So, you know, obviously public works facilities are going to have much more limited landscaping. We're going to be more about our buffers, protecting our neighbors, and meeting those requirements. That's something that we'll look at to see if it can apply to the project. So it's on the table. We're just not sure if it's going to be more adaptable to this project or not.
Okay.
And then the last one on this slide, funding. So I know we've got the contractors looking at different grant opportunities, and we're looking for those as well. I believe Denise did have a discussion with Kevin Guthrie pretty recently about, any suggestions that he might have for us moving forward, given his experience in the area as well. So,
what came out of that? And I know Denise is here. If she wants to add to that, that would be helpful.
Okay.
He's a pretty innovative guy, so I'm assuming he tried to suggest some options.
Yes, I did speak with Kevin Guthrie, Deputy Director of FDM. We talked about projects that he's been involved in the past, some of those innovative things he's done during his previous career in Pasco County, and I did glean a lot of information out of that. It's not specifically apples to apples to public works, but what I did get is that it's really important that public works is considered a critical facility, which it is. Very relevant to your previous presentation of the local mitigation strategy, it's important to have that project listed on the list it has that designation going with it, so it carries a bigger weight amongst all the other projects that are on that list. And specific to new projects, actually Laura Nelson, who oversees the LMS, knows a lot about mitigation projects, is still on the line. We expected some questions to come up. But back to Kevin, with Public Works, we're really only looking at retrofits, you know, trying to blend in what we're keeping and what we can harden, and generators, huge part of that. So with Kevin's insight, again, making sure it's reflected as a critical facility, so that opens up grants opportunities. You know, the ones we're most familiar with, unfortunately, is a disaster-related grants, HMGP grants that we told you a little bit about. But there's also new grants on the horizon that have just opened up through FEMA, pre-disaster grants that we'll be looking into, brand new. The architecture of these grants are much more faceted to resiliency, green infrastructure, things of that nature. But, you know, to the point, it's brand new. His office was very gracious. They've been sending us updates directly about anything that they know will come to us as well.
That's great. Thank you so much for doing that, and thank you for the update.
So moving on to one of our next items is our master plan. Back in 2017, you know, master plan was done, various scenarios were taken, you know, it was a long process of on-site visits, surveys, questionnaires, lots of planning and circulation routes. And the option that was recommended and preferred was one where we did a land swap from with our property to the north, the Wellfield grade, with property to the south of our existing site. That property transfer has occurred. That was done a couple of years ago. So this was the plan that was done. And since that time, there were many changes. There was organizational changes, you know, new city manager, new public works director, other operational and staff changes within public works. Stormwater maintenance staff that were formerly part of public works were moved to a new department, the stormwater engineering department. Park maintenance staff were moved to the Parks and Recreation Department. So a lot of internal organizational shifting and restructuring. And really the big one driver was the enhanced stormwater plan, because that added staff, added equipment over the past couple of years. So, you know, that 20-year vision, you know, for the stormwater really happened in a couple of years. So it really expedited things. So we knew that was going to have an impact. So we looked at doing an update. So we needed to update and validate the master plan. So we went through another scenario, some site visits, some questionnaires, interviews, updating of our staff and equipment lists and organizational charts, revisiting the operations, you know, how do we function, what's most feasible in terms of time saving, safety, those sorts of factors we thought about. So part of our temporary improvements, our immediate needs, you know, we did at Public Works is one, was to shore up some of the structures out there at Public Works, and then to move the stormwater staff over to some property that had been acquired on Utility Drive, the old Mosquito District property, which was adjacent to our fuel depot. So this was an aerial of that site. You know, Don had showed you this photo in his last presentation of doing some improvements. You know, this is the same vintage structures that's over existing at Public Works now, a lot of old aging stuff. We put in a leased trailer here. You know, we knew this was, you know, a temporary measure. You know, we're pretty much maxed out on this site for today's operations, you know, already, but it is nice to have all the maintenance items, equipment, operational staff there. You know, engineering still functioned at the city hall, but the stormwater side of things, the field stuff, is happening here. So looking at the master plan update, we said, okay, you know, the initial master plan, you know, included stormwater. You know, how does that factor in? And also knowing parks maintenance is broken off from public works, but they still function out of the public works facility today. So what would that option look at? We said, let's look at option A of, hey, stormwater comes back. You know, they're going to outgrow their facility now. Those buildings are old. You know, we got a lease trailer. We're going to need to do something with stormwater anyway. So let's look at what it means to bring them back. And then B would be, You know, maybe we pull engineering out. You know, one thing we found in our site visits is the engineering group and the public works groups are often situated in the same location. You know, engineering gets involved a lot upfront in planning and those sorts of things, but they also get heavily involved in operational and maintenance items as well. So they do function well with the public works. So that was an option B, you know, and then option C would be today, public works and park maintenance are functioning off that site. So what would that look like? So we spent a week, you know, on site looking through that, you know, basically we spent over a month collecting data, having questionnaires, and then we spent a week every day going through some different scenarios, talking with staff, updating and modifying this site plan in terms of how do we function, how do we operate. And this was all about, can we fit everybody on site? And we kind of looked at today's staffing and equipment counts, and then what our 10-year projections would be, and look to see if we could fit it on site. And basically, in our 10-year plan, this site, if everyone came back, stormwater engineering and public works tried to share a site and occupy this site, in a matter of 10 years, the site would be pretty much maxed out. So it was a good exercise to go through. It's an option, but then in 10 years, you know, what would the next plan be? And we go through in the future slides, you know, kind of some of the pros and cons of the different options we've discussed previously.
Well, I also think it, you know, when we first discussed this and first asked for this, it had to do also with efficiencies within the organization. I mean, it wasn't just a space needs analysis. It had to do with the efficiencies of the organization and certainly the coordination. And having it at different locations and facilities didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, a lot of this is somewhat cross-jurisdictional, you know, organizational internally with some of the projects and programs. Certainly, when you're talking about work orders and, you know, how you're sending technicians out in the field. So, you know, I'm not a fan of, you know, going back to siloing out different departments, but rather bringing everybody under an umbrella that makes sense. So, you know, what would be the alternative? I'm not sure. You're saying stormwater goes somewhere else?
That would be, there would be two alternatives. You know, one is we show some stormwater ponds. We could do underground chambers and put parking on top of those, which would buy us some space. Two would be to purchase some additional adjacent property or nearby property. Three would be store some equipment and materials off-site, so not everything is here, so you kind of have some of the specialized equipment that doesn't get used every day, you wouldn't necessarily store here. You would store it somewhere else.
Or would you store it relatively near there, or do you have an idea of how far away that would actually be? Would it be a big pain to have to go and get that stuff all the time, or...?
It depends on where the work is. The stormwater system, where they're located now in Utility Drive, is more centralized to the swale original stormwater system that's being maintained. So being at their location in Utility Drive now is beneficial in that respect.
Makes sense.
So we looked at the benefits of being at this facility, and there are some options, you know. Even if they aren't, maybe they aren't located here. Maybe the staff and equipment stays in Utility Drive. But this facility is used for pre-storm mobilization. It's used for training, safety sessions jointly with public works. You know, maybe engineering stays here too, and some of the operational for stormwater, so they function here. But the day-to-day stuff is done through a remote site. But then this site's utilized as that overall more comprehensive approach. And we kind of walked through that here in these upcoming slides. So we kind of went through some of those talking points. So. Yeah, right now, stormwater is on Utility Drive, and engineering staff is at City Hall, so moving them into a single location is beneficial in that respect, because now we're split, which would also, in turn, create some office space at City Hall, so when that admin building gets built in 7 years or so, there's going to be a need for some additional space here. I foresee that. We talked about having the traffic engineering transportation staff are going to be able to share a signal operations center with Public Works, signal and sign shop staff, and then talk about the transportation operational maintenance issues. You know, they go hand in hand. They coordinate now, they talk now, they do field visits now. Having them in adjacent rooms probably be a little more efficient, a little more effective. The rest of the engineering staff regarding park projects, facility projects, they'd be, again, more easily accessible to have those interactions with the maintenance and operations staff of those the various other facilities. And just the ability to coordinate between Stormwater and Public Works staff to hold joint training safety sessions. So those were some of the benefits. Some of the concerns, obviously, the room to expand. You know, so we don't want to build a site and then be there and very quickly outgrow the site. So, right, we'd have to either store materials off-site. So we would hopefully somewhere, I say adjacent, somewhere nearby, they could go, you know, they head out in their truck, they go pick up the material, the dirt, their pipe, whatever it may be they need for the job at some remote site that isn't too far away. From this current location would be one option. You know, the other option would be to shift some of the staff, you know, maybe parks maintenance moves off site, and because they're really dealing with the parks and they set up a new facility at one of our park facility sites. You know, there's several options and scenarios you could play out. Part of the concern of having the full stormwater staff here in Public Works is the congestion and safety. Just, you know, if we go back and look at the numbers, you know, we're talking 200 plus staff members and, you know, almost 300 pieces of equipment moving around that site. That's a lot of people, a lot of stuff.
Where are they now? You're saying they're at Utility Drive? All employees?
All the stormwater maintenance and operations are in Utility Drive at the fleet next to the fuel depot. They're on the old Mosquito District property.
So what are the options? Talk to me about the at any adjacent property for purchasing. What's the size of that?
There's no direct adjacent. To the west of this is a single property owner that's slated for, I believe, multifamily development. Along Industry Drive would be a potential connection. There's some vacant properties, you know, off of Hargrove Lane, for that matter, and there's some of those side streets. There's quite a bit of vacant property in that industrial area of the city. That would be another location that could be looked into as to what would make sense.
I mean, Matt, you're the head of this organization. What are your thoughts about coordination and taking departments and separating them and putting them in different locations?
Oh, I mean, it always presents challenges. We see that now. We've got several different sites. It's difficult to manage different work groups when we have various locations. Some of it's necessity, water, sewer treatment plants. Part of the reason this came back today was my understanding from watching this process from years ago through today was council and the community had a very clear understanding that they were investing in a singular facility that would accommodate the public works function, which I believe was, in the conversations I've had with staff, which was all of Public Works and your stormwater operations. Part of what's been revealed or is beginning to be revealed through the design phase is with the acceleration of stormwater and the addition of the fleet and the personnel, now we've got a short or long-term problem, depending on how we view it. Is 10 years an adequate service life for growth? Probably not. And so to your point, those were the first questions. Can we expand the buildings higher up to accommodate more? So personnel isn't the issue right now. My understanding is that the core issue about functionality and mobility is equipment, and we ask those same questions. Can we acquire additional adjacent property? I know there's a lot of wetlands directly to the west. Ideally, you'd have a single site. You'd have a single hardened site that is a campus that is big enough to function. So I don't know if that means we start at the drawing board again and look for a site that's actually going to accommodate the entire development as we've always proposed. I mean, those I think are where we're at. Is it's either going to be back to this philosophy and this pragmatism of, okay, we're going to build Public Works, and then in 5 or 10 years someone else is going to stand before a different council and say, now we need a stormwater master facility for another $20 million or $10 million. And so trying to get that economy of scale from the finance perspective and from the operational perspective of having a co-located facility long-term to the citizens, I think both financially and managerially, makes a ton of sense. And this site may have constraints that are going to prove too difficult. And so I wanted to bring it back to the council to really start to understand where the crossroads are at with this right now.
Councilmember Cuff.
One of my questions, I guess, in this was one of the advantages I think we were, I don't want to say sold, because I don't think it was a sales job. We all agree that we need a new public works facility and that it needs to be a priority. But one of the advantages of the single site, I thought, was that we would be able to make those facilities more storm resistant.
Yep.
I mean, the public works department is as much a frontline service provider to the city during storm events, hurricanes and so forth, and their ability to get stuff out of the roads and let the emergency vehicles get through. If we start splitting this up, I guess I'm not concerned, but I'd like to know what impact that's likely to have on the emergency services functions. In other words, if we keep storm water over at the utility compound where it is now, are we going to have to do some major upgrades to their facilities so that their staff and equipment would be accessible and available during emergency situations? Is that part of what's being considered, Carl?
Part of the consideration, I mean, at some point, yes, those facilities on Utility Drive, just due to the age and size, something will need to be done with them at some point. I think the overall intent is, yes, the public works facility is going to be the pre-storm site structure where all equipment, whether it's stormwater, it's public works, other utility, entities throughout the city, or departments, are going to stage there with their equipment and staff out of that facility, and it's going to be a hardened facility, and we're going to be able to function immediately after an event from that main site. So it's really about your day-to-day operations. Do they need to be here day-to-day? I'm speaking with both the departments, Public Works and Stormwater, having them share a site for day-to-day operations, there's no major benefit of them being situated on the same site because they have different funds. They can't share material stockpiles. Sometimes they do share equipment, but that's on occasion here and there. It's really all about the storm events and being prepped for storm events. And I think that's the overall intent. Is this stormwater, this new public works site, is going to be that storm event site, and that's where everyone is going to mobilize.
Right. And if I could, so just looking at the current phase out, I don't think the discussion we're having really affects the fleet maintenance side of it, other than if we would have to look at a different site. So we're sizing the fleet maintenance shop to take care of the entire fleet with room to grow. When we look at the administrative building, we are talking about making it a hardened enough facility to where we could use it as emergency operations, maybe an alternative site for the city as well. But operationally, when it comes to post-disaster or through a disaster response, it would be a facility that we could, have multiple functions working out of, including stormwater, and we would probably be dispersing equipment to other points throughout the city, just so that we operationally have it dispersed for the response by zone. So I know we currently do that with coordination through Chief Forte and just use some of those fire department locations as dispersal staging areas.
How much property do we have over, is it wastewater treatment plant? Where are these other offices located, city utility offices as well?
Where are they located?
There's a couple, not Utility Drive, I know that is some administration, but I'm talking about when I toured, when there was a hurricane out at the utility, that's where our servers are located, that's where our They've got huge training rooms. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of space over there. How much land do we own over there?
That I don't know the exact number. I don't know if Steve's on the phone. He probably knows, because I know there's a expansion site that was, I think, provided by Sawmill or the Associate Development. Are you still on the phone? Or, Carl, do you know the exact acreage?
I don't know the exact acreage, but with the wastewater treatment expansion there and some wetlands on site, that site is pretty much maxed out, because we used to use the site for dirt screening operations, and we had to move that off site to make room for this expansion project. So there is really no available lands there to park any equipment. There may be some ability to expand the building or use some of the building space, but there's really no site for equipment at that location.
Yes, and just to piggyback on Carl, the site is roughly 30 acres, but it's pretty much tapped out for what's there now, plus the future expansions of wastewater plant number two.
Okay.
Yeah, this site here at Public Works, I want to say it's about a little over 6 acres and 11 acres, so it's about 17 acres. Right here on this master plan that's on the screen, and the city does not have much property contiguous without wetland conservation pockets or whatnot that would be of this comparable size that's vacant right now.
Huh. Well, you know, again, I think we first started off this conversation certainly 4 years ago. It had to do with the fact of these were, you know, these were not safe working conditions for our public works department. It's a very old facility that was not up to any kind of code or standard. And so the conversation became is, you know, our employees maintaining, you know, pieces of equipment under unsafe, you know, conditions. Now, someone could argue saying they're safe, you know, to a standard. However, it always made me nervous going out there and looking at a big fire truck and, you know, having people out there maintaining it outside under no covering. So, I guess, you know, where we've come now is looking at shared workspace and from efficiency standpoint and making sure we're looking at storm events and hardening of facilities. We only have one chance to get this right. I just want to make sure we're doing it right rather than just rushing, you know, to get it done. So, you know, I guess I'd like to see all the sites that we do own in Palm Coast. The city owns what property and what size they are and where proximity and, you know, what are the alternatives, because I can't picture all of our property now. And is the utility administration building, is there ever a thought to move them over here instead of stormwater and then expand that?
So for my purposes, Mayor and Council, and as I mentioned with Matt and Carl, I wanted to get validation because my belief was we're trying to co-locate a single facility, regardless of the fact that some of the ground conditions have changed, so rather than be constrained by our challenges, what are our opportunities? So if that's still the consensus of council, that is the logical evolution, is first analyze the properties we have. I know it's been done. Let's take a look at if there's any adjacent properties near those that are either available to us, either through the context of a trade or acquisition, or and understand what the long-term needs are, so you or another council doesn't sit here in a few years now building yet another facility or another facility, to get that vision of getting our facilities hardened in a central location with the capability to expand in future years. So I think that is a current lands analysis, and it's getting to the actual design from a requirement standpoint and bringing it back and seeing what that feasibility would be, to your point, to get it right.
If we're bringing again all of sort of these work orders, and I mean everything.
Sorry to interrupt, but Mr. Cuff made a point. He was exactly right. If you recall, and Carl mentioned it in the presentation, those improvements out at the stormwater, the old mosquito, were termed to you as temporary. Those are temporary leases. Those are modular buildings. It's beautiful. The crew did a phenomenal job making the best and remodeling facilities. But those are old buildings from the 70s or 80s. They are remodeled, and they were intended to be this temporary transitional use till we get to a master facility. So if that's still the intent, which I believed it was, I think we have a little more work to do to bring back to council.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so that's what we will do then. We will go look at what some needs would be, see what property we do have, look at options, and come back to you with an updated presentation.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's, you know, again, if that's going vertical in certain areas, if that's, you know, looking at, you know, how we view condensing some of the areas we can go vertical with, maybe those are just options we can make and then look at alternatives for additional capacity.
Yeah, I mean, we'll work with Guild Main. We'll talk about this. You know, we have a lot of pickup trucks, white fleet. You know, does it make sense to put in a two-level parking deck here? Does the cost make sense versus purchasing a property? You know, so those sorts of things. So we'll look at many options and scenarios.
That's great.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you being so thoughtful, frankly, because, again, you know, you can't undo this once we get moving forward on it. So it's a lot of money we're talking about, and we want to make sure that we're providing a safe facility for our employees, but one that makes sense today, moving forward, and one that also addresses all things that come along with our city, meaning storms, meaning operations, meaning workflows, efficiencies, those sorts of things, and one facility.
Okay, understood. The next item on your agenda that Jason was going to talk about is your access to Industry Drive, and if you look at the right hand of your screen, that's this area here. There's an existing cul-de-sac, and it's getting across the private property, provide access on the south end of our site. And the main purpose of that is, one, so all the off-site vehicles coming to fleet don't have to traverse through operations of the public works yard. They're able to go directly to the fleet facility and get service there. It provides a secondary in and out for the facility for normal operations as well. So Jason will speak more to that. I just wanted to put a picture in here how it ties into the overall plan. You know, the plan would work without this connection. It would just mean everyone would come out on Wellfield Grade on the north side, on the left-hand side of the screen.
And Carl, I think in the future it might be helpful when you come back, certainly would for me. I don't know the exact operations of public works, what happens every morning when everyone comes on site and how they're dispersed. I don't know how stormwater likewise. So if we could just maybe have a presentation of a typical day in both departments, that might be helpful to understand where the pain points are, right, and where the bottlenecks would occur. I mean, is there like shifts that they do? Is it, you know, are they all coming in at the same time? Are they all coming in at different times? Is it staggered?
I think those are opportunities we have as part of this discussion. I know prior to COVID, it was one time, then they did some shift staggering, and that was one of the conversations we had is, if you had staggered shifts, what would that look like to facilitate, if it's purely a flow or a parking problem, to facilitate usage of the site if you don't have all 272 people at one moment in time within an hour trying to exit or enter a site, right? How does that change the variability of use and the adjacent lands question? So, great questions.
Okay. Thank you. Do you want me to go to the next agenda item? Or is Jason presenting or no?
He is. Jason's going to present the next item.
Okay.
I think we have direction to bring back another more in-depth discussion on what our opportunities and options are.
So agenda item number 4 is a resolution approving the U.S. Investment Holding Group Hard Marine Project.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Jason's here to present a performance-based economic development agreement. This was actually just about finalized a year and a half ago or so on a non-performance-based track, and has come back to us again on a performance-based track. And As Carlin had pointed out, it's an easement for access, ingress, and egress adjacent to the current public works facility on US 1. And Jason, would you go ahead and introduce this item?
Yes, good morning again, Mayor, City Council. Jason DiLorenzo, Community Development Department. So USIHG, Hardin Marine is the name that they go by here in Palm Coast. It's US Investment Holding Group. They also hold CP Performance in California. And for your consideration are three different agreements. It's an economic development agreement, an easement agreement, which Carl mentioned, and a stormwater maintenance agreement. And when we bring them to you at a business meeting, each one will be separated out so you can consider them individually. And right now, these are just drafts, and they're most definitely gonna change. The USIG, IHG attorneys haven't completed their review of them. Unfortunately, they were evacuated due to the California wildfires. So as soon as we are able to bring it forward, we will, but we don't have a timeline. But we had committed to the folks at Hardin that we would bring this to a workshop so you could start to familiarize yourself with it. And also it was good timing with the Public Works presentation so you could see the portion about the easement. So Hardin Marine has been in business for over 30 years. They are a mail order store for performance boating, and they manufacture and distribute OEM, original equipment, and aftermarket performance parts for boats. And they are currently located in Santa Rosa, California, and here in Palm Coast. This is the site on the left, a little bit higher view, so you can see the relationship. Industry Drive is the first right off of Hargrove Grade. The grayish box to the north would be the public works facility. And their existing is facility is in the kind of bluish greenish color. And then the red is a piece of property that they already own and are looking to expand into. The image on the right includes the general area where the easement for public works is located. Here's a more finite picture of the easement. It's 6,385 square feet. It's desired for that southern access to separate the fleet and the operations portions of public works. We had an appraisal done in June of this year, and it was valued, the portion of the property was valued at $10,800. As I said, also included in one of the agreements is an economic development agreement. It's performance-based. It is solely based on Hardin Marine expanding their operations in Palm Coast, adding a 20 to 40,000 square foot facility just west of their existing property within the next 24 months. That will, the incentives we're proposing is expedited permitting for this project, a $90,000 letter of credit to pay for planning, building, utility, and transportation impact fees associated with the expansion. So that's a not to exceed, and it would only be for whatever those actual costs end up being for that expansion. And that is will be funded out of the capital fund for the public works facility. And also to help them maximize their property, we would accept stormwater from the easement property and the new facility into a pond that will be built as part of the expansion of the public works property. And Carl had his staff do an evaluation for the amount that we could accept into that pond, and it would be the 2.5 acre foot of runoff based on the 100-year, 24-hour storm event for the expansion of that building. The reason why it includes the acceptance of stormwater easement because we will the easement itself will affect their current stormwater capacity that they have there. That is all I have for this presentation. The owners of Hardin were not available today to meet with you. This will come back as a business meeting, as I said, with three separate agreements for you to consider: the economic development incentive, the easement agreement itself, and the stormwater maintenance, which will have to do with the conveyance portion of the stormwater into our pond. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, any questions or comments on this issue?
Not at this time.
Have none? No? Okay, thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Okay. We will now move to agenda item number 5, which is a resolution establishing an art district within the Innovation District.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. As stated, Lauren is here to introduce this item.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I am very excited to present to you an update on the current Council priority for the establishing a Palm Coast Arts District. This Council priority I will be breaking up into three different pieces. Presenting to you today is part one, which is establishing the district itself and its geographical boundaries. This is an overlay map of the Arts District, which is inside the Innovation District. We've included parcels of key stakeholders like the Flagler Auditorium, the Palm Coast Arts Foundation, our very own Central Park, and future areas of expansion. Our mission statement for the Arts District is to foster creativity and economic vitality through artistic, educational, and commercial endeavors in a dynamic urban community. We hope that our values set the stage for the culture that we will bring with exploration, connection, education, and innovation. The vision for the Arts District: the Palm Coast Arts District is a place for social gathering and artistic expression. It will provide a destination for locals and tourists alike and will continue to revitalize the Innovation District and Town Center. The vibrant and humming culture will be fueled. will be fueled by the collaboration of artists with a global outlook while integrating artistic, residential, cultural, and commercial life. Our Arts District will be the hub of activity that attracts a plethora of businesses. It will offer space for the local community to display beautiful and artistry of all kinds, whether it be through a perfectly crafted microbrew, a thought-provoking sculpture, or the clean lines of a 1957 Jaguar. We hope that this vision embraces all generation and encompasses that culture that we're hoping to set place.
Lauren, quick note, you just went up a peg in my book for the 1957 Jaguar reference.
I was wondering where that came from.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Klupas. The programs and special events we hope to host. Palm Coast is a community where arts and culture are imbued into everyday life. Niche venues such as promenades, art galleries, sculpture gardens, and live music locales will drive the development of a versatile arts facility. This artistic unity is key to building and supporting a healthy environment for arts and culture. A variety of programs will stimulate residents and visitors to explore the arts spectrum: painting, architecture, sculpture, literature, music, performing arts, and cinema. We wouldn't be where we are today without fostering key partners and stakeholders. We want to facilitate time and space for the United We Art Council and other key stakeholders to meet and work collaboratively to conceive, strategize, and execute community-wide initiatives and programs. our next steps, and this is part of part two and part three that I'll be bringing to council soon, will be developing programming that generates revenue and stimulates artistic creation that aligns with the master plan, conducting a feasibility study to identify potential funding sources to support district initiatives and construct an arts facility. This arts facility is outlined in the current CRA guide. Strengthen the working relationship with the cultural arts grant recipients to enhance programming within the district. And that is the conclusion, and I would like to hear any feedback from council.
So, council, if you can recall, this has been a priority of council going on a couple years now, so we really appreciate that this is being brought back. This was an initiative that began with the thought of how do we bring out together and collaborate all the different arts groups in the community, meaning the repertoire theater, the art league, the auditorium, the arts foundation. We've had interest in the Flagler Playhouse to join in the art district as well, and then you know, we have some outliers that do want to participate as well to be collaborative, to not only host different cultural art opportunities in our arts district, like we do Food Truck Tuesday, but however have art festivals, those sorts of things, a gathering place for each, you know, individual art community that wants to participate. And we've had complete participation and involvement with all the different arts communities, which I think is exciting. And I think for the first time, we're seeing a lot more of that. I think due to limited funding sources, everyone has come together. But this will be the first step of many from engaging and offering cultural art opportunities right in our downtown. What Town Center was always meant to be, a gathering spot for our community to come together and really enjoy those experiences. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you bring back in the next steps and seeing how we continue to facilitate this discussion.
Thank you, Mayor.
Any other comments or feedback at this time?
Well said, Mayor.
Thank you. Good. Thank you very much, Lauren and your team. And again, the best I think is yet to come. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 6, which is a resolution approving the cultural arts grants for fiscal year 2020-2021.
Thank you again, Honorable Mayor, City Council. As you will recall, last year was the first year of a new coordinated process that Lauren and her team had put together to review and recommend approval for these grant amounts, and Lauren is here today to present.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Mayor and Council. We are here again for the annual cultural arts grant review process. Just a brief overview, just mentioned in the Arts District update, is grant recipients must participate in at least one community event hosted by the City of Palm Coast or facilitate an event or program located inside the Arts District. So we really want our cultural arts groups to come together, be more connected, work collaboratively. Our initial hope was to host a large arts festival working with Palm Coast Arts Foundation, maybe doing a Shakespeare in the Park, have all of our cultural arts groups have a booth. Our initial thought was that we'd be able to do it this fall, but I think COVID's going to have a different timeline for us, and we're going to try and kick it off in the spring, hopefully, but we do want these groups to work more collaboratively. The grant applications were reviewed by our internal cultural arts review team, which members consist of myself, Brittany McDermott, Denise Bevan, Kate Settle, Rose Consatio, Jose Papa, and Beth Dawson. Our open public virtual meeting was held on August 21st, and we reviewed the fiscal year 2021 submissions. I just have to tell you that, you know, moments before the Zoom meeting started, a lot of these groups haven't seen each other in quite some time, and they shared some camaraderie, and, you know, there were lots of laughs shared, so they're ready to get back to seeing each other. And then we have a tentative fiscal year 21 budgeted request amount of $30,000.
A question, if I may, on that presentation.
Yes, sir.
What is your definition of the word participate? That's rather vague.
It is. Some groups are rather larger than others, so it's however they can participate to their best ability, whether it's hosting a booth or performing in a designated time slot whenever we would have performances, but just getting out there and in the park and letting our community know who they are and what they are all about. These are our grant applications and recommendation. There were 12 groups that submitted for a grant this year, this coming year. We awarded all of the groups to be fair, to stay consistent. Most of the groups received an award of $2,636, except for the African American Caribbean Heritage Organization. They don't provide such an extensive program, and so they have only requested $1,000, but we gave them the full $1,000. If we did give all of the grant applicants funding for the maximum of $3,000, we would be looking at a budgeted amount of $34,000. But it's our recommendation to move forward with $29,996 for the fiscal year 21 period.
What is Family Matters?
That is an organization that is ran by Denise Calderwood, and she does transportation for seniors on bus trips. But in terms of the cultural arts, they do arts for seniors, so they come in and do different art programming. They take them on art field trips that they may have not been able to attend.
Were there any grant applications that were removed from this list of consideration?
No, sir. There was one group, the Flagler County Art League, that did not wish to submit for an applicant this year. They've been with us in the past, but they're having a change in their own internal programming and structure that they did not wish to submit. And I just, you know, wanted to, you know, tell council that this is a reimbursement grant that, you know, the groups must submit their receipts and backup documentation in order to fulfill this awarded amount. And the majority of the funding must be towards marketing and promotion of their programs, not internal operating expenses.
And where do they market to? Like,
they provide backup documentation of any type of Palm Coast Observer, News Tribune, Flagler Live, different flyers, if they've had a someone make their flyers, Facebook events, that type of thing.
Okay.
And if there was any other questions.
Any other questions at this time, Council?
No, not this time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Agenda item number 7 is a resolution approving 2021 legislative priorities. You know, I'd like to say something before we get started. You know, Councilmember Netz, I know you've been part of the Regional Planning Council for many years. I served for 6 of those years as well. You know, last year we decided not to participate in the regional planning legislative priorities because I asked each city and the county to come together and submit one of three priorities, submit to the Regional Planning Council, because we're the only community in the packet that has four different legislative priorities per county. And so it got kind of confusing a couple of years back. Some county commissioners felt that the city of Palm Coast priorities were our legislative priorities for that year, and I was trying to explain to them that no, these are submitted to the regional council, these are regional in nature, these aren't localized issues, they help support Northeast Florida. And so I just want to be very clear on why my position was to either come together with the other mayors and figure out, that's what they've always done, they've sent them to me, and we've coordinated through our quarterly meetings, and then submit to the county what we feel the cities are looking for as a regional. But I just wanted to open up to the council and let them know what my position is on this, is that I don't want it to be that this is our state legislative priorities. These are regional priorities. These are not localized priorities. These are not priorities that we submit to the legislative delegation on an annual basis when they come to our community. So I know you used to be part of the legislative committee and everything else. The regional.
So I think that's very well said. They are, as you said, they are regional.
Yeah.
Now, whether Bunnell benefits or Palm Coast benefits or the county, we all benefit if it's a regional activity. So I think your approach is rational, reasonable, and the appropriate one.
Yep, and Mayor, you always do a great job of unifying messages as well. So I'm with you that having a plethora of different initiatives can sometimes be, it dissolves the validity of the different initiatives that we're all trying to take up. So thank you for your efforts to unify the message that we're delivering to our state legislative and representatives.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, we all know home rule is important. I think they hear that every year, but if we're talking about, you know, water quality issues, those sorts of things, you know, I think those are a benefit for our legislators to understand these are important to us and do benefit the entire region. So, you know, I'd like to see if we can reach out and try to coordinate that.
Mayor, this is Denise Bevan, City Administration Coordinator. So I just want to be clear on any direction I get today, we collectively, on how to move forward. I'm your scribe, I'm your translator. So with that conversation we just had, could you just give a little bit more detail on next steps that you would see as a council?
These are not our City of Palm Coast legislative priorities for our legislative delegate. Correct.
Do our own.
Yes,
talking,
exactly.
That
yes, that's what you're. This is different, correct?
Correct. And I do have a couple of slides here just to navigate my understanding of what's been requested. And so, to your point, this was requested formally from Northeast Florida Regional Council to Flagler County. Flagler County is serving as a clearinghouse for those requests. So each city, each mayor, basically received a correspondence asking for that direction. And then, as it has been in previous years, the Board of County Commissioners is scheduled on September 21st to collect those submissions, coordinate that, and then send that back to Northeast Florida Regional Council. And so those are the actions that have been requested, and in respect to moving forward, in your packet, we did provide some background information. You know, previously in 2018, we did adopt legislative priorities. Wanted to make sure you had all the materials. And so there's a booklet that shows that product that would be created through the coordination of the county to the Northeast Florida Regional Council. And then, of course, our local priorities. So with that, to the pleasure of council and, of course, moving forward, my understanding is that they are regional. They I have a feeling that they do get diluted through the Board of County Commissioners process, and we really somewhat lose that control once it goes through that next step. So with that, I serve at your pleasure. If you want to go through those previously adopted priorities or navigate another way to approach this, I'm here to serve that direction.
Well, I mean, I could do this. They're due, what, the county ones are, what is today? Today's the 8th. We have a city business meeting on the 15th. I'd be happy to reach out to the mayors and get a consensus in advance of that, and then bring it back to this council and say, do we have a consensus to submit those as a regional priority?
Sounds like a great plan. That's our timeline. I have reached out directly to Flagler County to make sure that we were, even with action on the 15th, was going to keep pace with their needs, and it was. From my understanding, we're still able to meet those deadlines.
Okay. And, you know, again, if any individual council really thinks one regional priority is really still very strong, just also let me know. You know, I think it's changed. It's, you know, over the last few years as well. But, you know, we definitely want to make sure it's collaborative.
You know. Thank you, Mayor. Understood. Yes. And I'm here to help with any of that tangible product that's needed.
Yep. Great. Thank you so much. Okay. We just keep pushing through.
So we do have lunch that has been delivered, because if the first half was an indication of the second half, I thought we were still got several more hours. So that is available if you like that opportunity.
Well, this annexation, voluntary annexation, that's just written on it, but I'm sure it's going to have some discussion, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's do this. Is it okay if we take a quick break? Is it okay if we take a quick break for a quick bite, and then we'll
come
back?
Sure, sure.
Okay. Everyone, council, the rest, okay?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay. We will resume. How much time?
Fifteen minutes?
Two, five. No, let's
12:20.
12:20. Okay. Okay. Of 3.8-acre parcel at the southeast corner of Airport Road and State Road 100, owned by Airport Commons LLC.
Sorry. Good afternoon, City Manager, Mayor, members of City Council. Jose Papa for the Community Development Department. This is it's a voluntary annexation of the parcel at the southeast corner of Airport Drive and State Road 100. You might recognize it. It's the one that's currently under development as a shopping center. We do have a pre-annexation agreement for this particular parcel. They have met all the conditions of that pre-annexation agreement, and I believe we're ready to have first reading on their annexation. The key here is that the annexation cannot come into effect until after they've received a certificate of occupancy for the building. At this point, their agents feel that they will receive a CO at the end of this month, September. Our second reading is scheduled for October 6th. If they have not received their CO at that time, we can adjust the effective date of the ordinance so that it doesn't come into effect until after they've received their CO.
Jose, I have a question. In regards to, I remember this topic, this issue very well. And it was my understanding that the property owner owns more property than what's being developed. Are they annexing in the entire property they own, or just the part that's being developed?
Just the part that's being developed, Mayor. We do not have an annexation agreement for any other parcel at this time other than the 3.8-acre parcel.
How much do they owe? This was Bill. This was remember?
I do.
We had to go over and speak to the county.
There was an issue about development standards, Mayor, if you remember, as well as utilities and the coordination of those utilities. And that's one of the reasons that the interlocal agreement or the agreement between the county and the city and the developer was reached in order to accommodate the different interests, specifically what it was going to look like, how it was going to develop, and where it was going to get its utilities. Those are resolved pursuant to that agreement. But to your point, yes, there is a larger parcel that is owned by the developer or the property owner, but the portion that was the subject of the agreement and the subject of this voluntary annexation is just the 3.8 acres, which is being developed that we can see when we drive along State Road 100.
And so was there an issue also, not an issue, was there a conversation about transportation and the impact and who would coordinate on who was coming off of State Road 100 in there? Was the money supposed to also go back into Airport Road widening, do you know?
Yeah. Okay. I believe the property owner now is not, it used to be one big property owner, but I believe now there is a separate owner for this specific piece of property.
Okay.
And yes, when we were coordinating the pre-annexation agreement with this specific owner, he's very compliant on trying to comply with as many of our land development code regulations as possible. As a matter of fact, they went to the county to get a variance so they can comply with our standards. So they did a really excellent job to do that. Part of the transportation improvements was, because at the time there was an argument about, you know, if you're not going to come in now, you're not going to be able to, you know, pay your transportation impact fee. So what they ended up doing was making improvements to the Airport Road there, you know, putting in turn lanes. So in the staff report, you can see kind of the summary of, if they were in the city, they would have been credited that amount anyway. So they did make improvements to you know, the transportation networks.
Well, that's great. I mean, this is one example, again, of us working through complicated issues with our utility water service area. And so I'm appreciative of everyone's efforts because it wasn't easy in the beginning.
It wasn't, but at the end there was a lot of cooperation, as Mr. Tyner has indicated, not just from the county but also from the project developer as well. So I think a lot of the issues were accomplished as far as the transportation improvements and the development standards as well. That was obviously a major concern of this council.
And the other property owners now, they have the same understanding that they will annex upon development?
Yeah, I mean, they are in our, the other property is within our service area. So, you know, it's been the policy.
I think this provides a good precedent. Obviously, yeah. A lot of it's going to depend upon whether we have the same team or not, whether we have the same partners. This group of partners work very well. Hopefully we'll have the same issues when that property, same folks together, when that property comes forward for development.
Okay. Good. Council, any questions or comments on this agenda item?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Agenda item number F9 is a resolution approving an interlocal agreement with Flagler County related to CAD software maintenance.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. Chief Forte, Palm Coast Fire Department. The item before you is related to the CAD software that is maintained through the dispatch center. The Flagler County government itself owns the dispatch software and the dispatch protocol. The Sheriff's Office operates the center, and Palm Coast is the end user. And much like Flagler Beach or the other subsidiaries in the county, we're part of their operation and what we've been doing for many years, and we renewed it back in 2015, and we're renewing it again this year with your approval, is to allow for the software updates to be maintained so that the Tyler New World system, which operates the system, can continue in force. Any problems or challenges that we have goes through the county. The county operates personnel with Tyler in order to make sure that the system is maintained and is updated. And through Tyler and the county, they make sure that the dispatch center sends the information out to the other agencies through the 911 system. What we're asking for is the approval of this agreement the next meeting. The funding for it is already applied for in the department's operational budget, and it'll incrementally go up at 4% per year, depending on what our needs. There is one side note that if we do go for add-on modules, there would be an additional cost to that, but for the fire service ourselves, we don't see a need that we're gonna need add-on modules, but this is in case that we decided to add on to a different operation that required different software. For the CAD to operate, we would have that built in as a separate cost, but we don't foresee that to be part of the case. So this is-
You're talking about Tyler Technologies?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Tyler. Like a person.
Not our Tyler, but
okay.
Their Tyler.
I know. It's like, huh?
So the county owns the Tyler system, and they're the ones that maintain the system.
So, but it's a fairly new module for the county. It was purchased just a year and a half ago, Tyler Technologies. Is this new to us?
No, we've been paying into this program that we get the software through the county. The county owns and operates it, but we pay our share of it just like the other communities in the county. What Tyler does is they do the maintenance for the county, and we are part of that, so we're just offsetting the cost of the county by our share.
So do we get charged if we need to change a field or something within their module, or if we need support? How does that relationship work?
There's no additional charge. The cost is a flat rate per year. The only way it would change is if, say, we decided to go into the police business. That would be a significant add-on module that we would have to pick up another cost for. But since we do all our law enforcement through the sheriff's office, it's all taken care of through that organization. So for the most part, we can expect that the $12,000 to $12,800 per year is going to be pretty consistent, plus or minus the any kind of work that we have to do. It's all included in the upgrades.
I actually have a question as well. In our gated communities, using this system, is this how this works? If there's a 911 call and dispatch sends them out to, it happens to be one of our gated communities, and they go in one gate that seems to be further away from where the resident is calling from, how does that get coordinated and how do we manage that?
We've got AVL on the trucks, and let's call it a blue dot. When we go to the call, we can see where the house is calling with the blue dot by hitting the map component. So we can actually take a look at the location of the call. It's pretty much just like if you're looking for an address and you're using your cell phone to go find the same address, it'll tell you exactly where it is. We have the same thing on the trucks through CAD that we can actually hit the mapping and we can see where the structure is or the building is in that community. And we can choose to enter which gate we go in that'll get us there quicker.
Okay. And that 911 addresses and the mapping, is that still done through the county? They do all the address mapping?
They do through their GIS system. And I know we coordinate with our GIS system and the county. There's been a few instances where our numbering may be off and we work it out with the county to make sure that the numbers are correctly given out. But that is a county responsibility, and the county responsibility ties in with the 911 system.
And that all integrates into the CAD system?
Correct.
Okay. Those are all the questions I have. Any other questions or comments, Council?
None.
Thank you so much, Chief Forte.
Thank you, Mayor.
Agenda item number 10 is a resolution. Indemnity agreement with the City of Palm Coast Retirement Plan Fiduciary Committee members.
Good morning, Helena.
Sorry, I didn't know if you were going to introduce it or not. Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. These are the indemnity agreements for the members of the Retirement Fiduciary Committee. Mr. Morton recently increased the committee members to 5 members. We're welcoming the Public Works Director, Matt Mansell, and our Fire Chief, Forte. This covers both the 401A plan and the 457 deferred comp plan. We do have NFP, they're the financial advisors. We meet with them quarterly, and this is one of the items that they wanted approved.
Self-explanatory. Council, any questions or comments?
Pretty clear.
Thank you. Thank you, Helena.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Agenda item number 11 is a resolution approving the fiscal year 2021 fleet replacement purchase program and associated purchase orders for fleet vehicles and equipment as approved by the fiscal year 2021 budget.
Good morning again, or good afternoon now, Mayor and members
of the council. Good evening
here. Evening, yes. So this is an amendment to approve our fleet replacement and fleet purchase program for fiscal year 21. We present this to you at this point so that we can leverage some savings through early ordering of some of the piggyback contracts, such as Florida Sheriff's Assistant. We'll get into that in a little while, but what we did was we took all vehicles and equipment that have met or exceeded the original estimated lifespan, either through mileage or age, and we've done an internal assessment of those items to see if it is time to replace them or not. This year we inspected 271 vehicles or pieces of equipment that met that criteria, and after inspection, we have determined that we would like to replace 63 vehicles or equipment items, and as part of the budget process, we are introducing 9 new assets through the different departments for your consideration. So in order to do this, we're proposing several purchasing methods, including piggybacking existing state and national contracts, a couple of sole source agreements due to limited sources, as well as the collection of competitive bids for some of the items. And your agenda item does have outlined the proposed methods for each asset that we are asking to purchase or replace. The Florida Sheriff's contract, like I stated before, does have a shift in price after September 30th. So this also includes a request for early purchase before September 30th to get purchase orders in place for those items that would be included in the Florida Sheriff's Association contract piggyback. Any questions or comments at this time?
When we're looking at these vehicles again, are we looking at ways to look at alternative fuel at one point, or is there a plan and strategy in place for that?
Good question, Mayor. Yes, we are introducing this fiscal year one hybrid vehicle for consideration. We plan to track kind of maintenance costs and utilization and savings of fuel over time with that. Also, due to the fact that it is now a stated council priority to examine our entire fleet for electrification and alternative fuels, we are going to put a place in plan for future years to look at availability, maintenance, and sustainability costs of available replacement assets. And we will come to you with a more extensive plan on those in future years.
Great. Any questions or comments, Council?
You hit my question, Ms. Mayor.
Seeing none other. Thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. We'll now move to agenda item number G, which is public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comment, please call in at 386-223-1690. Okay, we'll close public comment.
They're still having lunch.
We'll move to agenda item number H, which is discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Council Member Nentz.
Nothing.
Vice Mayor Clufus.
I have nothing today, thank you.
Councilmember Benquino.
Nothing, other than if you want to make it in half an hour, everybody's invited to dinner. But they got to fly here in half an hour. It's a joke, by the way, it's a joke.
Council Member Cuff.
One, I hope, brief item, Madam Mayor. And I don't know if any other council members have been approached by either the Home Builders or the Flagler Realtors Association, but I have had some discussions with those organizations about what they see as a minor but beneficial change to the allowable colors for paint in the residential areas of the community. And I know this is an area, when I was on the PLDRB, we labored mightily to come up with different standards that were enforceable and so forth. But their concern is that I believe the city of Palm Coast is beginning to look awfully beige. And if it's not beige, it's beginning to look gray. I guess that's the new neutral color for single family homes these days. And they were hoping that they could work with the council and staff to perhaps propose some slightly more colorful standards, not that anybody wants our streets to look like Fraggle Rock or Whoville, but you know, perhaps something a little more than the color palette that we allow now under the current land development code. I've spoken to the city manager and to our development director about this, and if unless the council is strongly opposed, I would like to try to come up with some type of a proposal working with staff to address their concerns.
Did they present any colors to you? Did they tell you?
Oh, yeah, if you'd like, I'll ship you the Sherwin-Williams paint wheel that they gave me to look at. I mean, basically, the proposal is right now our land development code limits colors other than beige and gray and I think sage. I don't know about parsley and rosemary, but definitely sage. But any colors other than that have to be limited to a light reflectance value of 80, which is essentially white, a very slight tint of whatever color it is, whether it's yellow or pink or blue. They are proposing that that standard be changed from 80 to 60, and I'm supposed to be looking at some practical, you know, some samples of what that would mean in practice. And from what I have seen so far, it doesn't seem like an unreasonable request. So I did want to follow up on it and alert the council. And if anybody else has been approached by them, you know, I think this is, you know, is something we need to follow up on. It's not a matter of life or death, but both groups seem to think that their customers are looking for this kind of flexibility. And if it fits within the, you know, the standards of the city, then I think it's something we deserves a look at.
Any other council input?
I've not been approached.
Okay. Nor have I.
Nor have I. I haven't been approached formally by any of those groups, although I will say anecdotally it's something that you hear occasionally over the past 4 years, but nothing as of late and officially.
Yeah. It's been an issue that's come up from time to time, and I think that the folks that are talking about it with those groups feel like they've identified a relatively, I hate to use the term, simple fix, because when you're talking about aesthetics, it's always going to be in the eye of the beholder. But I did want to alert the council and see if there was any strong opposition or strong support or not strong opposition or strong support to continuing those discussions and seeing what they have to say. And that's all I have.
Okay. I have nothing on this agenda, so I will turn to our city attorney.
Nothing, Madam Mayor.
City manager.
Nothing. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well. Can I make a motion to adjourn this meeting?